The following show contains material that may not be suitable for children under the age of 16. The views and opinions are not necessarily accepted nor followed by the Haunted Voices Radio Network. Parental discretion is strongly advised.
Down the thunder. Well, now you've got it.
Come with me if you want to live.
Dying ain't much of a living. Go ahead. Make my day.
Run! Ah! Get to the chopper!
Ah, yes, it is another Tuesday, and that means Airstrike Radio. That's right, right over here, airstrikeonline.com, as well as the Haunted Voices Radio Network, or better known as hvrnc.com. That's right, if you guys are floating on over to HVRNC, make sure you go ahead and click that upper right-hand side of that website, enter the chat room, or come to airstrikeonline.com, scroll down the menu bar, and be interactive, folks. Join the chat room. And remember, all the call lines will be open tonight. And that, without further ado, let's introduce my Batman, my Robin. That is right. That is Todd Bates.
What's happening, Joel?
Not much, man. Just high and rum kick.
What? I knew that was going to come out right off the bat. Kudos to your wife for doing that.
It's oh, my God. She hands me a giant piece of rum cake. And go ahead, try this. And she's slurring her words as she's giving it to me. I was like, go ahead, honey, give it a try. So I take a bite of this thing. It's like drinking. Every bite is like a shot of Captain Morgan. I'll go there. One, every bite, next thing you know, I'm on the floor going, holy cow! Yeah, do my Harry Carey.
That's not even good.
No. It's horrible.
Uh-oh.
Oh, and what, is there a problem?
Yeah, that's my fault. I hit the wrong button.
Oh, you did? You did hit the wrong button? Are you starting?
Yeah, now we're good. Now we're good.
You're just now starting to learn how to use the new technology, aren't you?
Well, I'm getting a late start today. You know, today's the days that my wife goes to college, which she's doing awesome at, by the way, doing for surgical tech there. She's doing great. And it's late days where I don't get around in here in the studio until about 6 or 6:30, Joel. And then you come in here, it's like a chicken with its head cut off.
Oh, sure. I know that feeling. You know, constantly I know that feeling. I'm fighting the clock all day kind of thing. And I can hear myself coming back through your head. It's driving me crazy, dog.
Yeah, that is something to see. If I shut that feature off, they can't hear us over there at Kelsey Live.
That's right. That is the brand new, ultra cool new Kelsey Live over there. That place is rocking.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a ton of them over there, and that's the thing. I mean, it's with the feedback and things, I'm catching it myself too.
Oh yeah. We'll get over it somehow.
Yeah, we gotta work. We gotta work on that. See how we can do it, but yeah, they're over there. They're jumping there in the chat room. They're filling up as we speak, and they're really, really liking it so far. So, and it just started. The first thing's out of your mouth for Run Kate.
That's right. I embarrassed us all by going, I'm already drunk, Todd. I had the rum cake. No, I'm serious, man. This thing was like a shot of Captain in a bite. It even came to me shaped like a bottle.
Yeah, because they're sending your boozed soak baking goods.
Yes, that's dangerous, people. That's dangerous. You never know. I don't know. This thing, what I needed was a Coke chaser with it.
It's Coca-Cola.
That's right, Coca-Cola. Okay, yeah. That's right, yeah, let's be specific. Yeah, we definitely don't want to talk about Coke, that's for sure. But
yeah, I know, it's just one of those days.
Don't pick and drive. I'm over here at the Kelsey room actually with you, checking it out. And don't not like that. Woohoo! Don't bake and drive. That's right. You do not want to bake and drive, folks. That's right. Making cupcakes and driving your SUV is never a good thing, especially that easy bake oven. That'll kill you.
I mean, it might take 2.5 days to cook the thing, but it works. The things you can do with a light bulb, Joel, it's amazing.
I know. I can cook a whole meal with a light bulb, apparently.
And she made a pretzel in there, Joel. I got sick of waiting, so I took it out of there and put it in the microwave. You know, what the hell do you think you're going to accomplish with this thing, child?
Well, my first question is, what the hell is so easy with it?
Exactly.
You know, wow, it's a light bulb. Yay!
That's a good point. It says years, you know, 8 years and up. But yet they all, it's 8 years and up, please ask for parent supervision.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Well, I need supervision on everything. So, and that's why I got married. Can you imagine if I wasn't married? Whoa.
Mm. Me either.
It would not be a good sight.
I like wearing the leash and collar. It works out good.
Yeah, I do too. It's actually a lot of fun right there, you know.
Oh, kinda, pull back.
Yeah, oh, definitely. Definitely. Kind of, you know, keeps you in line a little bit, you know, that whole nine yards. But anyhow, while they're handing you rum cake and making you intoxicated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all good. You could cover it up with cherries all you want and still booze.
It is. Marshmallow cherries go hand in hand for
it. Yes, doesn't everybody know it's the perfect chaser? So how was your week so far? I know it's only Tuesday, but anything exciting going on in the world of Todd Bates?
Yeah, it's a lot of family home stuff. Everything's working out good there, getting everything organized for a change. And, yeah, I mean, everything's popping in real good, getting all kinds of good feedback about all kinds of stuff. And things are changing, Joel, and we'll sit down and we'll talk more about it, of course, off the air.
Well, you know, I actually have a big announcement that I kind of brokered today that I can actually say on the air.
Do tell.
Everybody's favorite tarot card reader, Scotty Roberts, is going to come and have his own show with us.
That is awesome.
Yeah, Scotty rocks, man. He has Dead Reckoning Radio, which is really a top-flight show. And today I got him all squared away. The guy already knows how to broadcast himself, so that's a bonus, too. So
He's going to be on the Airstrike Network.
Yep, that's right. He's going to be right there at Airstrike Online. That's right. He's also going to change the website. I know he's a perfectionist. He builds websites for a living. And he looked at mine, he's like, did you make this a crayon or something?
I knew something. If he saw that, he's Oh,
I'm going to be on this? I'm sorry, but I have a lot higher standards.
He's getting out the good stuff on that one. He made an awesome new logo.
I know, yeah, he gave me a little bit of a taste, because I was like, I don't know if I really want to change my site. Well, look at the logo first. And so I had to go ahead and change everything with the site, the template and the whole nine yards, just to make it look better with that logo. But the logo is looking great.
It is. It is. Yeah, we got to get cheeky to change that on our main page, too. We got to get that circulated around there. It's got the whole, what is that, like a little Air Force logo on there?
Yeah, yeah, it's got that retro look to it as well, like an old 1950s lettering. People are just going to have to go to Airstrike Online to take a look at it. And go ahead, give us your opinion on that new logo. I personally think it'd look great on t-shirts.
I think so, too.
Yeah, it'd look killer.
See, my dad was in the Air Force, Joel.
Oh, he was? Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he flew the F-15s and all that good stuff. I mean, he's still in the psychiatric hospital. He's supposed to get out soon.
Well, yeah, that's the byproduct of going, you know, 50 Gs. It has a habit of, you know, killing off brain cells.
Post-traumatic stress syndrome or something like that.
Ah, PTSD. Yes, that's a lovely thing.
Yeah, him and my uncle both had some. My uncle's over there. He was stuck behind a rock under enemy fire for a week and a half.
So I have to ask you, when they have an episode, they have one together and they reenact things?
When it's good, yeah. I mean, we used to have fun with him.
That's good, yeah.
Yeah, we'd have fun with him. You know, we'd have his little flashbacks and stuff, and he'd make light of it.
You know.
They always happen at like 2, 3 in the morning, see?
You know, fireworks work great for that.
We never celebrated 4th of July as a kid, Joel.
I bet not. You know, fireworks and bottle rockets.
The sparkler?
Hey, Dad, watch this.
Sparkler. Boy, they use those at night to see us on the trail.
Why is Dad, you doing a survival roll?
Yeah, he's feeling much better now.
Yes, he's feeling much better, but it was really bad when we took him down there to Chinatown for Chinese New Year. That was not pretty.
Oh, man. Yeah, the Tet Offensive just didn't go over real well back then, Joel.
No.
He didn't want to bring things like that up.
He had a hard time with it, you know, so you really can't fault the guy.
Oh,
you know,
man.
40,000 Orientals and they all want to kill him.
Vietnam vets unite for feedback. I can see it now.
Yeah. I can see now. Vietnam vets boycott airstrike. That would be the next thing. You know, I won't be able to go in a VA anymore. Get out of here. We heard what you said.
Oh, it's crazy.
Yes, yes, it is very crazy. It's funny. It's just funny watching some of the life is funny, Todd.
It is.
You know, if you don't stop and listen and laugh a little bit, other people, of course. I never laugh at myself, you know, because it's just a rule, you know. But I do enjoy laughing at other people's expenses.
You have to.
Does that make me a bad person?
No, no, not at all. Not at all.
You know.
Did you happen to check the CBS News tonight there with Katie Couric?
No, I did not.
She's hot, by the way.
She was hot. She was hot. Okay, she's kind of let herself go.
Well, yeah, she looks like she, with her hair anyway, looks like she got in a fight with a ceiling fan in law.
She
was talking about terrorism, Joel.
Wow.
Terrorism. Yeah, it was a breaking news. Everybody's looking for Bin Laden, and now some other guy that they can't pronounce his name, but he's got a beard just like every other person over there does.
Oh, yeah, of course. And they scream, Ali Allah Akbar.
But they put on there that they released their spy planes. I mean, they told these people they have spy planes flying all over there, right? They're all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And it said, and they showed footage of what they can do. So it showed footage on them blasting a line of terrorists right out of the desert. And, okay, that's effective. And then there was the reporter standing there, and she goes, now, you can't see above me, but the spy plane is flying at 10,000 feet right above me. And if you look straight up where they tell us it's at, you still can't see it.
You still can't. Wow, that was really helpful. Well, look at that. I'm looking at the sky. Hey, that's a nice cloud
exactly.
Right there.
Okay, lady. Yeah, we believe every word you're saying.
Yeah, we do. Oh, wow. You know, for some reason, I don't trust a woman that looks like Ellen DeGeneres.
No, oh man, a brunette Ellen DeGeneres, yeah.
Yes. Well, it's Ellen's birthday today.
But she goes from straight from terrorism attacks to just pure chaos to teenage pregnancies on the rise. Who writes this stuff?
Condom sales down, pregnancy up. News at 7.
Yeah, it's just crazy stuff they had on there. Then they're banning 911 calls from being used on any media, radio, television, all that.
You're kidding me.
Mm-mm.
Oh, boy. Well, really? You cannot?
What?
You cannot play 911 calls anymore?
No.
On television?
You're passing the bill, and it's already passing.
Crazy. So this is what you're going to... Is this what you're going to hear when you call?
The number you have reached 911. FAC.
Please hold. They're banning it, and they did that because... Well, you remember Brittany Murphy. She passed away, right?
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
They did it because of her 911 call.
Oh, you got to be kidding me. You mean when John Wayne Bobbitt got his weenie cut off and they played that for no problem? Huh? I'm sitting here holding a stump. Somebody help me. They didn't turn it off for that, but yet for Brittany Murphy, they will?
Yeah, the parents went ballistic.
Wow.
They went ballistic, but yet they said, sure, go ahead and play it. They were mad that they played it, but they gave him full permission to play it.
Wow. Well, you can't really be mad if you give him full permission. That just doesn't work that way.
No.
You know.
Nah. So, yeah, those days us playing stupid 911 calls were over.
Yeah, those days of pranking the fuzz is way over now. And I was having a lot of fun with Skype.
Those were good times.
Dude, I have a Skype phone just like you do. You know, Skype number, the whole nine yards, right? I'm sitting here at my desk, right? And a telemarketer calls my Skype number.
You're kidding.
No, out of nowhere. Your auto insurance. What?
Did you have fun with him?
Oh, it was a recording about your auto insurance being expired. They're hitting that now. Is there anything safe? You know, yeah. We are tracing the call, and we have found you. With this IP address, we're coming to get you if you do not buy our crappy stuff.
Auto insurance.
Yeah. Yeah, the warranty, the auto warranty is expired.
Yeah, it's the one, you know, it's because all the cash for clunker stuff, so they're wanting to insure these things, so they still get more money coming in.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's a vicious cycle, Todd.
It is.
A vicious, vicious cycle.
I got a 1912 Model A, and it's hard to insure that thing.
It is. It's really tough because you'll never get the value back of it. You know, it's, you know, they, it's like, well, if you do total it, you're out $7. You know? You know, that's the thing. You know, it's hard to insure that, you know, that kind of stuff. You're basically all beer money.
Well, that kind of massive horsepower, you know, it's a speed getter, you know. I mean, that thing goes at least in excess of 20 miles an hour.
Yes, yes. Back when the Charleston was all the rage.
The Charleston. The Roaring Twenties.
You dang kids and your...
You can have it in any color you want as long as it's black.
Yeah, yeah. Those are the days, weren't they? That when a stiff wind would foil your plans.
A stiff wind would foil your plans. That'd be bad. Honey, we're going against the wind. It's going to take an extra couple days.
That's right. It's all over, honey. You're going to have to get out and push. That's right. You're bigger than I am. Look at those calves that you have. Come on. Do you mind putting this on and getting in front?
Oh, jeez.
Pull! Oh, man. Well, tonight we have one heck of a great guest.
Oh, yeah.
We have our Gary Patterson coming on. The guy is absolutely everywhere. Everywhere from VH1 to MTV to A&E to E to, you know, the E for Entertainment channel. I got to be specific there for a second. Also wrote, you know, books like, oh my gosh, he's written so many. He's Hellhounds on my on their trail. I like the one that is Rock and Roll Tales in the Rock and Roll Graveyard.
Yeah, I want to hear about that.
Oh my God, the guy is just everywhere, and he is the foremost authority on rock and roll myths, legends, and curses. So when bad crap happens in the world of rock and roll, this is the guy that you call.
Yeah, I mean, I want to hear about the Buddy Holly thing, Richie Valens thing, you know, all that stuff.
The curse of 27 alone is crazy. All the rock and rollers that have died at the age of 27 boggles the mind.
I never even thought of that.
You know, I looked at it, there's like tons and tons that have died at 27. Like over 50 rock and rollers have died at the age of 27.
Wow. Well, they burned out fast.
Yeah, oh yeah, apparently 27's a tough age. Jimi Hendrix, I think, died at 27.
Yeah, well, he was burning out there around 25 or
well,
so.
Well, you know, there are some people that think he was murdered, though.
Murdered?
Yeah, murdered.
What do they do? Lace his dope?
I have no idea. Yeah, yeah. Yes, we're going to make you do more dope. That's right.
Yeah. Maybe his body just murdered him.
Maybe. Well, you know, it's a little thing called heroin. You know, has a habit of killing you when you overdose.
That'll bring you down a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit. You know, it's not very much fun. That's right. You know, then you end up meeting some lady named Betty Ford and, you know, all that kind of good stuff. Well, anyhow, we have him coming on, which is always a blast and a pleasure to have him aboard. Have you ever interviewed him, Todd?
No.
Oh, my God. You are in for a treat. This guy is will absolutely knock your socks off. Ton of fun. And I'm dying to know. See, there, people have been hitting me up all day to ask him, was Paul really dead?
Was Paul really the walrus?
Well, here's the thing. There's people that think that Paul McCartney today is an impersonator of Paul McCartney of yesterday.
Oh, man. He must be off his meds.
You know, no, that's not Paul. He's dead. Oh, they put an impersonator in there. And then there was also one that someone wanted me to hit up for him. They want this question asked. Is it true that Keith Richards really smoked his dad's ashes?
Ooh. Oh.
You know, so there's all sorts of rock and roll myths, legends, and curses in the whole nine yards. It's just crazy. It's just crazy. But yeah, man, but without any further ado, what do you say we go ahead, go off the break, bring in Gary, so these people can hear it right from the horse's mouth, as it were.
I'm there.
And we'll be right back after this, guys. But don't go anywhere, because when we come back, rock and roll myths and legends guru himself, R. Gary Patterson, will be right here with us right after this.
From the imagination of author Stephen Wren, radio producer for Haunted Voices Radio, and the director of Tennessee Paranormal, a new fiction series based on pirates and the paranormal, Jeremiah Balloon and the Amulet of the Siren. According to a recent review by ParanormalNews.com, there are misty visitors, ghost pirates, orbs of light, astral projection, secret societies, spiritualistic entities, missions of the human soul, which make it a truly enjoyable read. Now available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Borders, Books A Million, Tower Books, and more. Or visit Jeremiah on the web at jeremiahbloom.com or the author Stephen Wren at stephenwren.com.
Jeremiah Bloom, an amulet of Osirin.
Late at night I hear Billy say, lay down low and learn to be still. While his eyes search for him better, got a broken neck from looking over his shoulder. You are the glue that holds me together. You are the secret that I always keep. Red line, crossing me over. Late at night when I hear him I say, don't get carried distance. Don't get carried away, let him play with your mind. Get so carried away as a fire over distance left you behind. Scary picture the window paints. Invisible words that say don't look through. No rain now can save or soothe me. Sounds like someone that I once knew. Something's waiting on the other side. Something moves that I can feel it crawl. Radio plays that same damn line. Radio, radio blind. Don't get carried away. Don't get carried away and play with your mind. Get so carried away as a fire on the distance. Someday you'll find.
Affordable and independent with LoudCity.com. Discover great music with over 500 channels to choose from, or become a DJ and stream your own music. For more information, visit LoudCity.com today.
What do you guys think of Airstrike Radio?
It's only one I listen to.
I just like everything about it. It's just really funny because, I mean, I like to stay up with current events, but at the same time, I also like to laugh, so it's the best of both worlds.
Simple fact of the matter, they're, for one, down home, they like to go about doing community stuff, and then, of course, just the wildness that they have in there.
Definitely turned on. basically they just do and say whatever they want.
They always are coming up with new stuff, new twists.
Thank you for your feedback. Remember to keep listening right here on Airstrike Radio Online as well as HVRNC.com. That's the Haunted Voices Radio Network. And Airstrike Radio coming right back at you. That's right. You can't stop us. That's right. You can only hope to contain us. But tonight, we have an extra special treat for everybody, and that is rock and roll, myths and legends, guru, expert, whatever you want to call him, R. Gary Patterson. Gary, you there?
I'm here, guys. Great to be with you.
Yeah.
How you doing, Gary?
Hey, man. I'm
doing fine.
It's been a while since we've had you on. I've been looking forward to this all day, so if I act like I'm a kid at Christmas, I have so many questions running through my head, like always, whenever we talk. And Gary, you know, why don't we set the tone a little bit, and let's tell the folks a little bit about yourself.
Well, okay, basically I'm a native Tennessean, so I have a southern accent, and of course rock and roll was created in the South, we all know that, and I grew up listening to it, loved it, played
Freebird.
The guitar. It's just been so much fun, and you know, picking up the legends, and then from the legends into my books. I have I'm a writer, and I'm published with Simon & Schuster. My first book was called The Walrus's Paul, which is about the Paul is Dead rumors from 1969. It's a fun book. The second book is called Hellhounds on Their Trail, which actually starts with Robert Johnson filling his soul at the crossroad, and I started a thing called The Curse of 27 or the 27 Club. And it was the number of rock stars who died at the age of 27, exactly as Robert Johnson. It sort of hints at an idea of some unworldly curse that could have been unleashed at that crossroads, and had 42 famous rock stars died because of it. But the last book I wrote is called Take a Walk on the Dark Side, Rock and Roll Myths, Legends, and Curses, and it's with Simon & Schuster as well. I'm lucky enough to have them as best-selling titles on Amazon, and I'm working on my next one, so I'll write it this summer. We'll see what happens with it. I also teach school, and I teach a fabulous rock history class at a high school level, and I just have a great time at whatever I do. I love doing radio and television. I did a series for VH1 called VH1 Confidential. I'm a consultant for VH1. I also did a series, or not a series, but a program last year with E! Called Doom to Die, 13 Curses. So I get around.
Well, and you're also a great musician in your own right, by the way.
Thank you.
I watched the DVD again today that you sent me. I think it was either a year or two ago when that first came out, that Curses. And you play that guitar so skillfully, and I think that we talked about that the last time we spoke, but you actually played that yourself, and there's kind of a little story behind the guitar that they handed you.
Well, it's actually funny, because they flew me out to Hollywood, and I was out there working on a couple projects, and there's a network called MQM, and they do slang and a lot of programs. And they said, you know, you tell these stories on radio. How about let's videotape it, and we'll do this DVD? And they had the idea of me opening up each series with a guitar. Now, you got to remember, I have my own stuff, but I didn't bring anything with me to L.A. So I'm here, and we go to the Sunset Marquee, where the recording studio was in a hotel. And they said, well, we've got these guitars for Gibson. And, you know, so I was sitting there, and they had this Slash model Gibson Les Paul. And I swear to you, the rust on those strings, I thought I was going to have a tetanus shot. And they had this amp, so, you know, the recording, I haven't told anybody this, but I had to play a guitar that the strings were dead. I had to clean the strings with alcohol for an hour before I played it.
Oh, wow.
And then I had this small amp. It's funny. I mean, I don't like to make apologies for it, but, you know, I'm sitting here playing it, and I'm sitting here going, man. And they said, well, just come up with some piece before you tell the story. So I had to sit there on camera and play an introduction to each of the stories, you know. So I'm glad I remembered all those songs I could do on the tape, but it was fun. But that's the story, the secret funny story behind those guitars.
So yeah,
imagine that.
Well, you played it like it wasn't rusted at all, okay? So you did very well with it.
Well, I appreciate it. You're very kind.
Well, I'm sitting here, and something that people were asking me all day today, whether it be on Facebook, whether it be other social networking sites when I pop in, why are there so many rockers that are dying at the age of 27?
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting. And when I did Hellhounds on Their Trail, one of the chapters I was, you know, sort of looking if there's any strange and unexplained references to rock stars' death. Because I got to tell you guys, you know, I'm not into writing rock, I don't do obituaries for rock stars, and I don't, you know, if something doesn't interest me, but if there's something that ties it in, and if it's that strange twist of fate or whatever it is that sends those small hairs on the back of your neck, you know, then I know that it's more like a Twilight Zone meets rock and roll. So when I was researching the book, it just hit me how odd it was that so many rock stars died at the age of 27. And it starts back with Robert Johnson, because Robert Johnson died at the age of 27. Mm-hmm. And just off the top of my head very quickly, you have Robert Johnson died at 27. Brian Jones of the Rolling Stones died at 27. Jimi Hendrix died at 27. And when Janis Joplin had heard that Jimi Hendrix had died, she had said, "Oh, well, I'm glad I didn't die today, because he would have got all the press." Well, she died two weeks later at 27. When Jim Morrison died in Paris, he was 27. And when he was in Miami, he said, well, you know, he'd heard that Hendrix and Joplin had both died, and he turned to his friends and said, "You know, you're drinking with number three." Well, he was the next to die at 27. Pigpen from the Grateful Dead died at 27. Pete Ham from Badfinger died at 27. Chris Bell from Big Star died at 27. Kurt Cobain died at 27. Kristen Pfaff died at 27. And the list goes on. And, you know, I had documented a number of these, and then there was a student who had done a study, and he was working on his doctorate, and he was working in statistics. So he put all the ages of rock stars and figured out what was the most deadly age of rock stars, and guess what? It was 27. And he gave me a list of 42 rock stars who had died at the age of 27. I mean, it starts with Ritchie Valens, who was only 17 when he died, but over 42 rock stars died at the age of 27. It's the number one age for the death of rock stars. Now, that's pretty spooky.
That is.
So if you go back to the crossroads and you have 2 plus 7 makes 9, and you go into numerology and you get to the number 9, that's the highest spiritual power number, or the number of reincarnation when you get off the wheel. And you talk about, you know, even in astrology, 27 patterns, you know, and all this. So whether it has to do with numerology, whether it has to do with astrology, or whether it's probably one of the strangest coincidences ever, if you're 27 years old and you're a rock star, stay out of small planes. Don't play the electric guitar in the bathtub. And wait till you're 28 before you get out on the road. And stay away from any drugs whatsoever.
Take a year vacation.
Well, yeah, basically.
Take a year. Guess who's on the line, I believe.
Who's on the line?
Is this who we were talking about?
Mr. Kelsey Grammer.
Oh. Yeah, hi, guys.
Hi, Kelsey.
How's it going?
Oh, not too bad. How are you doing tonight?
I'm fantastic, man. I was just checking you out on the site. It looks really cool. I mean, it's a really good thing. And your caller was interesting, this 27-year-old death of rock star thing. It's kind of fascinating.
Well, I just want to qualify this really quick for our listeners and listening elsewhere. This is Kelsey Grammer from Frasier, Cheers, and all these other great shows he's put out there. Kelsey, it's an honor to meet you.
Likewise, Todd. I was just throwing, my guys, you know, run the Kelsey Live site thing, said that you were up, so I said, I'm going to go find them.
You found. What an awesome show to tune into. I mean, there's all kinds of great stuff here going on.
Yeah, I love this Peggy Sue idea. Is that a surprise?
It's a
Did
surprise.
I just blow it? Okay, good.
No, you just blew it. No.
But you'll have to.
Todd, I'm driving to your house.
That did suck me in there. I was pretty impressed. Listen, I don't want to rain on your parade, but I wanted to call in and say hi and tell you I appreciate you being over here and the work you're doing. It's really fun. Very cool.
Thank you so very much. That means a lot. It really, really does. That's a great compliment.
It's a pleasure, man.
Thank you.
It's a great talk to you, Kelsey. This is Gary.
Yeah, by the way, this is Gary Patterson.
Hey, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. It's great to talk to you. I love your work.
Thank you. Thanks a lot, man. Listen, I'm not going to mess anymore. I'm just going to sit back and relax and watch you guys and listen. And thanks. Maybe we'll call in again sometime.
Oh, I hope so. I can't thank you enough for calling in.
Cool. Take care, guys.
You
take
too.
Care, Todd. Take care, Gary.
Take care, man. Thank you.
All right. So long.
All right. Bye-bye.
Take care, Kelsey.
Wow.
Well, that's cool. That's cool. You don't get a caller like that in there every day. Well, thank you very much for calling in. And, I mean, the we were talking a little bit about the age of 27, and a whole other slew of rock stars, like you said, died at 27. But the most notable in my mind is Robert Johnson. Because not only was he the first, but his story, it's eerie. The Crossroads. How can you go wrong with that type of story? That's almost tailor-made for Hollywood.
You know, it is. And if you do you remember the movie Crossroads? Do you remember the movie?
Yes.
You know, where the Karate Kid has to fight Steve Vai in a roadhouse from hell over who's the best guitarist? It shows the devil doesn't play fair. You know, the Karate Kid wax on, wax off, and you had Steve Vai blistering that guitar part. Thank God for Ry Cooter. But, you know, doing the guitar parts. But, you know, I think the movie was trying to be a serious film on Robert Johnson, but somehow they switched it around into the story looking for the missing Robert Johnson song. But, you know, the whole story of the Crossroads is fascinating because if you're in Mississippi, you can go to Highway 49 where it intersects Highway 61. Now, it's not in the center of town where the big sign is, the commercial sign. It's outside town. And the story goes that Robert Johnson was a very average player, and he actually played the blues harp more than the guitar. And the old blues guys used to dodge him. And I'm talking about Son House, and I'm talking about Charlie Patton and the others, because they didn't want him set in. He was so bad that Robert Johnson disappeared. He went looking for his father, which went up into Memphis. And when he came back, and this was a number of weeks later, he was probably the most incredible guitar player on the Mississippi Delta. And he had a whole new technique. And when Son House heard him play, he turned to his friends and he said, you know, he sold his soul to play like that. Because there was a legend that if a blues man waited at a crossroads, a deserted country crossroads, somewhere around midnight, and he could play a few blues licks, that a huge black man would appear behind him. And he would take the guitar from him. You dared not look back. And he would tune the guitar to a special tuning, and he would hand it back. And if you accepted the guitar, you'd made your pact. Now, the pact would be that you'd be able to play the blues, you'd be famous, you'd have the adoring company of many women, but it would be a tragic life. You would die a young death. And Robert Johnson died at the age of 27, poisoned in a roadhouse. Took him 3 days to die, and according to the legend, he was on his hands and knees barking like a dog when he died. And that was that devil's music that was released. And, you know, even Bob Dylan, if you remember Bob Dylan, Highway 61 Revisited.
Yep.
You know, I mean, Bessie Smith died on Highway 61. So when you get there, I mean, it became the thing of the first great urban legend. And I know that Eric Clapton heard the story before he really got into the music, because that's what focused the British guitarist onto Robert Johnson. It was the legend of selling his soul. That's what brought Keith Richards into it, and especially Jimmy Page. And if you remember, when Plant and Page got back together, they had an album called Walking into Clarksdale, and that was...
He's got music on hold with the stuff. Look.
Nope.
Yeah.
What's that? He's got music on hold with the show going on. You see it?
Oh, yeah.
Apparently our hold button malfunctioned.
What's going on? Yeah, we got a caller on waiting to come on. Is there something going on?
Yeah, hello, are you guys there?
Yes, we are. Yes, we are.
This is Todd from KelseyLive.com and David Fleming. We just got Kelsey to call in.
Is that Mr. Bates?
Well, thank you very
much. Are we partying now? We called him at his house and we said, hey, Kelsey, get on the phone. You got to see Todd Bates's radio show. He's phenomenal when he does it, because I know he invited you by tweeting you, but I mean, you know, he really wanted to, you know, come on, so he came on.
Man.
Hey, Todd.
Yes.
This is David Foley. I'm going to send you a graphic I did for Robert Johnson, dude. The fucking Crossroads, and he's got a serpent coming out of his guitar. Things are on fire. He's got the ghouls after him. It's called Robert Johnson Judgment Day.
Oh, wow!
I used to do a lot of album covers, so, dude.
Well, do you guys have a question for Gary Patterson?
Yeah,
Gary, we have a lot of questions for you.
Hey, does Gary Patterson know Alan Aldridge?
Excuse me.
Do you know Alan Aldridge, the Beatles artist?
I may have met him. I've met so many. I know that the person that I've spent most of the time with around the Beatles was Bill Harry, who was John Lennon's best friend. But as far as the artists go, I mean, I did Beatlefest in New York. I did Beatlefest in Chicago, L.A., Atlanta. I mean, all over the place. And there were a number of great artists there. And I have some of their work. So maybe I do. It's just been a while. I think the last Beatles show I did was in 1992.
You probably did. he probably did. The Queen of England, I mean, they said he was the majesty to the Beatles. He did, you know, illustrator lyrics. He did them all. He did a one-man museum show last November in London. But, yeah, he was, you know, he sat in the room with Elvis. He sat in the room with John. I mean, him and John Lennon were best buddies, and he still communicates with McCartney every once in a while, especially Yoko. So he's a pretty cool guy. Anyway, he's an old friend of mine. But,
and David's being humble because David did a lot of the illustrations and album covers for the Beatles and also for Gramnet Productions, and he did it for Merv Griffin Enterprises and for Disney.
Great stuff.
And then Ruth McCartney is actually a good friend of ours, who is, of course, Paul's sister, and she does a lot of the websites for a lot of the celebrities out here in L.A.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
She's working with people like Corbin Blue from High School Musical and stuff, and we work with her all the time in our business.
Well, that's great. I met Ruth and Angie in New York, I think.
Oh, wow. Wow, that is really cool. Guys, I want to thank you so much for calling in. We have to skedaddle to our next break, and we'll be right back. With more Gary Patterson.
I'm going to upload a graphic for Robert Johnson.
And maybe even a very special guest when we come back right after.
Thanks very much, guys.
Since 1948, Fate magazine has delivered a one-of-a-kind reading experience, covering everything from psychics, UFOs, paranormal investigations, and more. For more information, visit FateMag.com or call 1-800-728-2730. That's 1-800-728-2730. Fate magazine, true reports of the strange and unknown.
You've bought his records, you've seen his films, you've even purchased the Dayglo Velvet Memorial paintings at the gas station. As a true Elvis fan, you think you've heard it all, but wait, there's more. Now you can buy secret recordings of Elvis's last telephone conversations. Yes, it's the Elvis tapes.
Hello, baby. This is Elvis. And I want you to come over right now and make me a big peanut butter and then a sandwich. A peanut butter and then a sandwich will get me through the night.
You'll hear Elvis in his most intimate moments.
Hello, Pizza Man, Pizza. Yeah, this is the Elvis. Won't you bring me over a couple large pies? I'll make it three. I'll make it six, double cheese. Yeah, I'm hungry. I'm alone. And I'm hungry.
And you'll hear Elvis reveal how he really feels about the one true love of his life.
I want you back. I want you back in my life, baby. And on your way back, would you pick up some donuts, please? Egg jelly, cream donuts, crullers, cheese, Danish too. I love my big honey glazed donuts. Without them, I can't do.
The Elvis tape.
Oh, give me more donuts.
Available now in drugstores everywhere.
I love to eat a little bit more.
Hello? Hi, Mildred, it's Betty. What are you up to?
Oh, just trying to find some information on ghosts. There's so many sites to choose from, I don't even know where to start.
Have I got the place for you. It's called hauntedvoices.com, and they got all the info you could ever need.
Really?
Yeah, they even have free EVP lessons. You know, like they showed in that movie with Mikey Keaton.
Oh, the spirit voices.
That's the one. And they have live chats each Monday night at 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern. They got special guests and everything.
What's the site again?
It's hauntedvoices.com.
Thanks, Betty. Gotta run now.
Where to?
Where do you think? To hauntedvoices.com.
There's a storm brewing in this country. A storm of apathy towards some of our most historic landmarks, like Fort Mifflin in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. This is the fort that saved America. It held the British at bay while George Washington went upriver to Valley Forge. Now it's in danger of being shut down. There are people who are weathering this storm.
This is Barbara Saletti, co-founder of the Fort Mifflin Historic Preservation Group.
This is Anthony Saletti, co-founder of the Fort Mifflin Historic Preservation Group.
But they can't do it alone.
They need our help. Go to www.myspace.com/SaveFortMifflin or www.fortmifflin.com. Together, we can make a difference. Let's save Fort Mifflin and turn the tide of apathy.
You're listening to your home of stimulating talk radio. Airstrike Radio.
That's right, Airstrike Radio is back, coming right back at you. That's right, infesting your inner eardrum. That's right, as it were. And we're back with rock and roll myths and legends expert himself. He's an author. In fact, one of his books was so expensive that, well, God couldn't even afford it at one time. That's right, R. Gary Patterson. I remember, was it, now, if it doesn't escape me, it's Hellhounds on the Trail. We'll cover that later. That really, at one time, was a very expensive book. But we kind of got a little bit of a setup for our listeners here, and we'd love to jump right into the Buddy Holly curse. Because that has a heck of a story on its own.
Well, it is. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, you look at things that are curses, and you wonder if it's some sort of supernatural soliciting or whether it's just, you know, a decades-long run of bad luck. But when Buddy Holly, you know, I was really just blown away in my research when I found that, of course, you know, the day the music died was February 3rd, 1959, and everybody knows that Buddy Holly, Ritchie Valens, and the Big Bopper were killed in the plane crash, and that the Big Bopper and Waylon Jennings had changed places because the Bopper had the flu, and the Big Bopper let Waylon have his brand-new sleeping bag, and Waylon enjoyed being on the bus. But you got to remember, that bus tour, the temperature was 40 below zero, and these guys were burning newspapers in the aisle to keep warm. And they were setting up, sleeping on that bus. They couldn't take showers. They couldn't change their clothes. They couldn't have laundried clothes. And that's why Buddy Holly chartered the plane. The strange story was that Ritchie Valens, who had a terrible fear of flying, decided he wanted the last seat to go with Holly and the Big Bopper. So he and Tommy also flipped the coin. Ritchie won the coin toss, and he turned and said, "This is the first time I ever won," because he called heads. Well, what he won was probably a ticket to rock and roll heaven, because Tommy Alsop started a bar in Texas that he called the Heads Up Saloon because it saved his life. So we know they were killed. We know the music changed in 1959. And actually, 1959 is almost the year the music died, because not only was Buddy Holly, Ritchie Valens, and the Big Bopper killed in a plane crash, but you also had Chuck Berry was in jail for violation of the Mann Act. Little Richard had become a minister and had backed out of rock and roll. Jerry Lee Lewis had married his 13-year-old cousin, and his career was over by 1959. Elvis was in the Army and was never the threat that he was, you know, to American morals after he got out of the Army when he started doing the movies. And then, of course, Alan Freed was destroyed by the payola scandals, and he was the guy who coined the phrase rock and roll. But what happened was anyone who took Buddy Holly's place in the Crickets, strange things happened. Ronnie Smith was the singer who fulfilled the rest of the winter dance party. After the show, he goes back, checks himself into a Texas sanitarium, and hangs himself. Then David Box, who was 17 years old, took the place of Buddy Holly in the Crickets, and he sounded very much like Buddy Holly. But he decided to leave, start his own solo group, so he leaves. In Houston, Texas, he charters a small plane, gets on it with members of his band, and he was killed in the plane crash with his band members, and he was 22 years old, the exact same age as Buddy Holly. So you have that. Buddy Holly's best friend was Eddie Cochran. Eddie Cochran could really play the guitar. I mean, he did riffs, not chords. And he was supposed to be on the winter dance party, but he backed out at the last minute to do a show and to be on TV. But he knew his final destination, that he had cheated death, because if he had been there, he would have been on that plane. So when he goes to England on tour, his girlfriend Sharon Sheely was with him. He had her go out and buy all the Buddy Holly records. She came home to the hotel, and he was sitting in the dark playing Buddy Holly records over and over again. And she said, "Eddie, you got to stop this." And he looked at her, and he said, "No, because I think I'm going to be seeing Buddy soon." He went to a fortune teller in England who told him that, you know, supposedly the exact date of his death. He woke up crying. In his sleep, he yelled out, he said, "I'm going to die, and there's not anything anyone can do about it." Well, he died in 1960. Of course, One of his last songs was Three Steps to Heaven, which is kind of ironic, as Buddy Holly's last song was I Guess It Doesn't Matter Anymore. But Eddie Cochran also cut a song called Three Stars, which is a tribute to the plane crash. And when you hear him talk about Buddy Holly, you can hear his voice break with the emotion. He tells his producer that if that record's ever released, he will never do another one. Mm. When he was killed in a car accident in England, the record was released later. So now Eddie Cochran's dead. Now, the Holly family got lots of tapes from aspiring rock guitarists, so Bobby Fuller sent his demo tape to Buddy Holly's mother and father, who in turn took the demo tape to Norman Petty in Clovis, New Mexico, where Buddy did all his recording. He was signed, but he left Clovis, went to Hollywood, and he cut a song called I Fought the Law and the Law Won. You remember that song?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
It was written by Sonny Curtis, who was one of the Crickets. One night, early morning, I guess 1 a.m., Bobby receives a phone call. He tells his mother that he has to go out for a while, and he took her Oldsmobile. Now, he had a Corvette, but he took the Oldsmobile. He told her he'd be back in a few hours. Off he goes. He didn't come back the whole night. Finally, late afternoon, early evening, the car pulls into the garage, cuts the motor off, and his mother waits, does the same. She goes down to the garage, and there lays Bobby Fuller, stretched out across the front seat. He'd been badly beaten. One of his fingers, I think his left index finger, was broken. He'd been doused with gasoline, and there was gasoline in his stomach. When the police come over, they find a gas can in the back of the car that they throw in a dumpster. They didn't do fingerprints, and they said that Bobby Fuller had committed suicide. Well, now listen, you can't drink gasoline while you're alive. It's impossible because you regurgitate it. So the gasoline had been forced down his throat after he had died, and you can't beat yourself that badly. And he wouldn't have he would never have killed himself and had his mother find his body. So there was a story that it was a gangland killing. But the odd thing was the last song Bobby Fuller cut was Love's Made a Fool of You, which was written by Buddy Holly. And Bobby Fuller was 22 years old when he died. Now the story continues. After you have Bobby Fuller, you may know that Keith Moon in The Who, when he died at a flat that was owned by Harry Nilsson. The strange thing was, 4 years before Keith Moon died, Mama Cass had died in the same apartment. So I guess it was Rock and Roll, hotel or whatever, but Heartbreak Hotel. But regardless, he had died in the same room. Now, the night before his death, it was September 6th, he and Paul McCartney had gone out to watch the Buddy play on the London West End. He comes home, fixes something to eat, takes some medication to help with his drinking problem, and he died on September 7th. Well, what makes September 7th interesting is that was the exact birthday of Buddy Holly, September 7th. So he died on Buddy Holly's birthday, and that was strange. Even the movie The Buddy Holly Story that came out in 1977, the screenplay writer, Robert Gittler, committed suicide the day the movie was released in the theaters. And when they found Mark Bolan's body from T-Rex, when they got his little car, they looked through it, and a bumper sticker and a badge had fallen out, and it said, "Every day is a holiday." And now Mark Bolan was dead. And when you take a look at this, Ricky Nelson. Well, Ricky Nelson's last song was Rave On by Buddy Holly, his encore. And then the plane crashed. Now, the funny story about Ricky's plane was he had purchased it from Jerry Lee Lewis. And Jerry Lee had a premonition that he would die in that plane, so he sold it. Well, Ricky Nelson died in the plane after it was sold.
Wow.
Del Shannon, the story keeps going, guys. I mean, I'm telling you.
Well, I'm glad you said Del Shannon, who was a huge Ricky Nelson fan. Now she
Well, knows. You know, that isn't that odd. And, you know, Del Shannon had made a comeback. Runaway was big hit. The British Invasion came. His music sort of stopped out for a while. He and Tom Petty had gotten together. And Del Shannon played a reunion concert with the Crickets on the anniversary of Buddy Holly's plane crash. I think it was the 31st anniversary, which would have been February 3rd, 1990. 9 days later, he commits suicide on February the 9th. So the last show he played was, you know, the Buddy Holly tribute. And he just found out that he had been voted in to the Traveling Wilburys to take Roy Orbison's place. Tupac was shot on September 7th, Buddy Holly's birthday. As you throw in some other things with it, Joe Meek was probably the greatest producer in England at the time. He'd turned down the Beatles, so he wasn't very bright with that, but he still was a great producer. He did the song Telstar. and he was playing tarot cards. This was in 1958. And he had turned the cards over, and as the cards were turned over, he and two other players, they wrote the message down, which said, Buddy Holly dies February 3rd. So they tried to get in touch with Buddy Holly. Buddy Holly and the Crickets didn't get to England until March. But Joe Mick tells him, he says, you have to promise me you'll be careful on February 3rd. Holly promised he would. Well, February 3rd, 1959, Buddy Holly's killed. Joe Meek gets more and more into the occult. He gets more into seances. Some people think he was possessed. And Joe Meek commits suicide on February 3rd. I think it was in 67, on the anniversary of Buddy Holly's death. Now, if you have Joe Meek, who is the greatest producer in England, who was the greatest record producer in the United States at that time, and that was Phil Spector, okay? One of the strange things about Spector was that he'd been pronounced dead in two car accidents and came back, which is odd enough. But I was in L.A. working with VH1, and I was flying back, and I picked up a newspaper at the airport, and it said that Phil Spector had been arrested for murder. And when I looked at the date on the newspaper, it was February 3rd. So sometimes there's a gift that keeps on giving.
Wow. That goes beyond a curse. That many people dying, and Buddy Holly was the head domino that started it all.
I mean, isn't that odd?
That's just crazy.
I mean, it's very strange. And, you know, people ask me if I believe in curses. Well, you know, when I think about this, you know, it's just so much bad luck that comes out with it. And it seems like it's still going on. But, you know, I'm not really a superstitious guy, but I'll tell you, I don't get on planes on February 3rd.
Yeah, you don't.
I mean, it plays out itself. It's all documented right there. Yeah, you can't
yeah,
avoid something like that.
Yeah, we'll have to get Marilyn Manson on a plane on that day. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to say that.
No, that's okay. The mics are off, Joel. They didn't hear that.
Oh, good, good, good. No, no. But as we talk about it a little bit further and further, it even stretches to the world of rap with Tupac.
I mean, it goes everywhere. You know,
it doesn't necessarily stay in rock and roll. It spills over to other genres of music as well.
Yeah, and I think that's what's really odd about it. And I'm sure that there's other things that pull in with that. But, you know, when I think of Phil Spector and I think of Joe Meek, the two greatest producers in the 50s when Buddy Holly was really making his great music, and these two guys had tragic accidents, well, suicide and also murder on February 3rd that ended their career and their legacy, you know. It's just like Buddy Holly. And, of course, like I said, Buddy Holly's last song was I Guess It Doesn't Matter Anymore. And, by the way, Joe Meek used to have seances where he would contact Buddy Holly's spirit in the afterworld, and he would play songs for him to see if they were going to be hits. And one song that he had written was called A Tribute to Buddy Holly, mm-hmm. and he supposedly got the message, see you on the charts.
Well,
it didn't work out too well in the United States.
Has anything happened to any of the people that portrayed Buddy Holly on film?
Well, think about Gary Busey. You remember the story after the Buddy Holly movie. He'd bought Buddy Holly's guitar. It was an acoustic guitar. And then he has this terrible motorcycle accident because he wasn't wearing a helmet. And he faced death right after that. And like the guy who wrote the screenplay, commits suicide the day the movie's released.
What?
So, you know, you still have some ties. Oh, so I'm not sure about Marshall Crenshaw. I think he's doing fine.
Marshall's under a rock somewhere. He's under a rock somewhere nervous. Marshall is.
Well, okay.
I'm sure of it.
Gary Busey went through this. I watched that film that he did the Buddy Holly story.
Well,
there.
No, mm-hmm. I mean, if you're Marshall, though, you know, the last guy that nothing's happened to, wouldn't you go hide under a rock somewhere?
Oh, I'd put myself in a jail cell.
It's not going to get me, I swear.
Lock yourself in there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, still, I mean, what do you do? You know, I mean, it just seems like it's just a very strange series of coincidences. And even if you play those Buddy Holly anniversaries, you know, strange things have happened to artists. And, you know, I think that's probably, to me, the greatest curse. Now, when I was working with NBC and E!, and we were doing Doomed to Die 13 Curses, and they were asking me what the great curses were. I said, you're going to have to do this Buddy Holly curse.
You have to.
The guy, the producer, said, oh, come on, man. Nobody knows who Buddy Holly is.
Oh.
And I sat there, and I thought, yeah, that's what the problem is right now. You know, everybody knows who Buddy Holly is.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, everybody, yeah, exactly. How many rock and rollers have modeled themselves after Buddy Holly as well?
Exactly, because Buddy Holly made it cool to wear glasses on stage.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why I gave John Lennon, you know, the confidence to put his glasses on. I remember watching the, let's see, who was it? The Zombies doing She's Not There. and there's those real heavy black glasses from the British musicians because they love Buddy Holly.
Yeah, the BCGs, they call them sometimes, birth control glasses.
they still wear them to this day. Buddy Holly style glasses. Yeah, they're everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And
they're popular
as
ever.
It's just the music. And I think the Buddy Holly story with Gary Busey did more to bring Buddy Holly's music to a new generation because a lot of people had heard the songs, but they didn't think it was that skinny kid from Texas with the black glasses who was doing it. Because he really didn't look rock and roll, did he?
No, but
the glasses were cool.
Definitely. On that note, though, we got our... Wow, that's crazy, but we're going to come back after the top of the hour news. We have something very, very special for our listeners. It's going to blow your mind when we come back right after this.
From the imagination of author Stephen Wren, radio producer for Haunted Voices Radio, and the director of Tennessee Paranormal, a new fiction series based on pirates and the paranormal, Jeremiah Balloon and the Amulet of the Siren. According to a recent review by ParanormalNews.com, there are misty visitors, ghost pirates, orbs of light, astral projection, secret societies, spiritualistic entities, missions of the human soul, which make it a truly enjoyable read. Now available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Borders, Books A Million, Tower Books, and more. Or visit Jeremiah on the web at jeremiahbloom.com or the author, Stephen Wren, at stephenwren.com. Jeremiah Balloon and the Amulet of Osiris.
Fox News Radio. I'm Chris Stanley. President Obama is proposing a spending freeze as one way to deal with the escalating budget deficit and will outline it in his State of the Union address tomorrow night. But Fox News Radio's Mike Makowicz is live with word of a lukewarm congressional reception.
Well, the proposal was greeted with a polite, if unenthusiastic, response here in the Capitol. Republicans like the president talking about spending restraint, but New Hampshire Senator Judd Gregg notes it's indexed for inflation and has some big exemptions.
They don't consider the unspent TARP money as part of the freeze, which would be a huge mistake.
And some Democrats worry about key programs being squeezed. Count independent Bernie Sanders of Vermont among them.
At a time when our educational system is in severe crisis, when people are going hungry, do we cut back or freeze those programs? No.
Congress enjoys the power of the purse, and it usually doesn't give that up very easily. Chris?
All right, thanks, Mike. Earlier today, Senator Gregg was one of the sponsors of an amendment that would have set up a special panel to work on ways to cut the deficit. That proposal going down to defeat. There were 53 yes votes, but under special floor rules, it needed 60 to pass. Looks like a bad ending to the case of that Virginia Tech student missing since last October 17th. Fox News Radio's Jeff Manasso is live with that story.
And Chris, investigators in Virginia say skeletal remains were found at a farm southwest of Charlottesville, where 20-year-old Morgan Harrington was last seen at a Metallica rock concert 3 months ago.
Based on the evidence that was there that we've recovered, we're fairly confident this time that the remains are those of Morgan Dana Harrington.
But State Police Colonel Stephen Flaherty says an autopsy has to be done for a positive ID and cause of death, and that the investigation has now shifted into finding out how Morgan Harrington got there and who's responsible. Chris?
Federal marshals have arrested four people in New Orleans, accusing them of trying to interfere with the office telephones of U.S. Senator Mary Landrieu. The feds aren't saying what the motive was or if they were successful. You're listening to Fox News Radio. Fair and balanced.
You're in the Fox Light.
The soulful country band with the weird name lends a boot kick to this week's Fox Light Music Release Roundup. Need You Now is the sophomore turn from Lady Antebellum, its lead single already a number one smash. Female Irish collective Celtic Woman returned with Songs from the Heart and their takes on tracks by Sting, Billy Joel, and Phil Collins. Barry Manilow apparently ran out of decades, so he broadens his interpretive reach with the greatest love songs of all time, a collection of Valentine-inspired tracks from the worlds of standards, film, and Broadway. Corinne Bailey Ray returns after a four-year break with The Sea. And hit tracks by Owl City, Kings of Leon, Lady Gaga, and others are all screeched up on Kids Bop 17. And check out the Fox Life blog at foxnewsradio.com or the free Fox Life podcast at foxnewstalk.com for even more. In New York, Rob Moorer, Fox News Talk.
The Fox Life.
Keep listening for more focus from the Fox Life on Fox News Talk.
The Los Angeles City Council has taken a second vote on the city's medical marijuana dispensaries, passing an ordinance on a 9-3 vote that will shut down hundreds of them. It limits the number to 70, and they have to be at least 1,000 feet from schools, public parks, libraries, or churches. The Saab won't die after all. General Motors agreeing today to sell the Swiss car brand to a small Dutch car maker, Spyker. Well, it's week three of the San Francisco trial to determine whether the state's voter-approved ban on gay marriage is legal.
A witness testifying for those who support the ban on gay marriage acknowledged that gays probably do face a lot of discrimination in the workplace. Claremont McKenna College professor Kenneth Miller said it while being cross-examined. Monday, he testified that due to support from elected leaders, unions, and others, gay people have quite a bit of power. Attorneys for two gay couples suing to stop the ban in federal court spent much of their time trying to show that gays deserve special protection, the kind that religion and race get. Jessica Rosenthal, Fox News Radio.
On Wall Street, the Dow down by 3, the S&P off by 5, the NASDAQ losing 7. Russians love their vodka, but are they willing to pay a relatively high price for it? And we're not just talking about their livers.
It used to be cheaper than water, but now vodka costs a whopping $3 a half liter, thanks to Russian President Dmitry Medvedev. He ordered the increase in an effort to combat widespread alcoholism throughout the country. Despite his attempt to rein in the problem, Anna Boguslavskaya says it will do no good because Russians will always drink. Mikhail Gorbachev tried to decrease drinking in the 80s, but his plan backfired. The country saw an increase in moonshine and runs on shaving lotion and alcohol. In Moscow, Jessica Gallagher, Fox News Radio.
A small plane ran out of gas over Houston today. The veteran pilot saying an apparent gauge problem led him to think he had more gas than was actually there. So when the engine sputtered and gave out, Brendan Ford aimed the Cessna for a golf course fairway he spotted, landed safely with no injuries to anybody. I'm Chris Stanley, Fox News Radio.
Promote your site or organization on the Haunted Voices Radio Network. We can provide you with a commercial up to 1 minute in length for just $40 per month. This commercial will air during every live Haunted Voices radio show and will be repeated in the show archives, as well as the streaming archives, which run 24/7. Have your own commercial? Up to 1 minute in length is only $20 per month. 30-second commercials are just $20 per month, or $10 per month if you create them yourself. To have your commercial aired on every network show? That's right. Every single program on the Haunted Voices Radio Network, the cost is only $50 per month. Add your banner up to 455 by 60 in size to our scrolling sponsor list. These sponsors are also randomly mentioned throughout live broadcasts. To purchase a personalized banner, contact Hayden Hall by clicking on his graphics banner on the Haunted Voices Radio main page. For more information on advertising with the Haunted Voices Radio Network, contact Todd Bates at Haunted Voices.
Welcome back to Airstrike Radio. That's right, Airstrike Radio, right? It's Tuesday night, and we got the incomparable R. Gary Patterson with us, as well as my co-host and partner in crime, Todd Bates. And we are, well, we're blessed and honored to have, well, I think Gary does it best. Gary, why don't you introduce our extra special out-of-nowhere guest?
Well, first of all, I have to tell you, it's a great honor for me every time I'm on a show with her. We're very, very close friends, and I can't think of ever talking about the history of Buddy Holly without bringing on rock and roll's first rock goddess, and that is the original Peggy Sue Guerin, who Buddy Holly had written a song, Peggy Sue. Welcome, Peggy Sue.
Wow. Well, thank you, Mr. Gary Patterson. I love that always.
Peggy and I are close. We go way back.
I kind of gathered that. You guys have a great
rapport. What an honor, Joel.
Absolutely. This is knocking my socks off here.
Well, listen, thank both of you, Todd and Joel. Thank you for having me on, letting me come on and talk and have fun.
Wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, there's a slew of questions are hitting me like you know, like a monkey on amphetamines right now that I want to ask you a ton of questions. But the first one, I guess, that everyone would really want to know, what was Buddy Holly really like in his personal, just everyday life?
He was a very serious musician. He was just a really nice guy, unassuming. The ego didn't, if there was some ego, I never detected that in Buddy's personality. But he was a perfectionist, and he music was just morning, noon, and night with him. But he was also great fun just to be with. You know, we'd go to dinner, and he'd want everybody to go to dinner. And he would plan little things and little jokes on people. And he just had a great personality and just was really well-rounded.
Watching him perform, when he's performing his music, you can tell that there is, just watching him on tape, because obviously, you know, unfortunately, we lost him way too early. You know, we lost him entirely too early. But watching some old footage of him, he is so deliberate when he is singing. He is so right on. And I think there's a lot of people or a lot of musicians that try to mimic him, even to this day, that perfection, that same drive, that same passion in music. And when he wrote the song Peggy Sue, how did you receive that when the first time you heard it?
Well, I'll tell you what, that's a really special memory in my life and always will be. But Buddy started, they had gone to Clovis, New Mexico at Norman Petty's to record. And about 4 o'clock in the morning, he went into Norman Petty. He said, I've written a song. And Norman said, okay. He said, well, what's the title? He said, well, I'm going to name it after Jerry's old girlfriend because I dated Jerry Awesome, the drummer. And even though we had broken up and we were not dating, and he said, I'm going to call it Peggy Sue. And so that he did. That's they went in and recorded it that night. But to answer your question, I got invited by Jerry Olson through my mother. They contacted her. They were on the road with the Show of Stars during that time after That'll Be the Day had become an enormous hit. And I was invited to the rock show in Sacramento Memorial Auditorium, where I was going to girls' school, Catholic girls' school. And luckily, my mother said I could go, thinking that the nuns would go with me. But I got to go by myself, so it was even more fun. And so Jerry met me backstage, and I got to go in to the auditorium. And for the first time, I had all the records from Laverne Baker and Fats Domino and Little Richard, and just, you know, but I'd never seen them. I didn't know what they looked like. And they were all on this show. And in the middle of this, they announced the Crickets, and they came out. And Buddy, of course, was the lead singer of the Crickets. And he did That'll Be the Day. And then he said, there's somebody special in the audience tonight, and we're going to, I have a new record out, and it says Buddy Holly's on the record, but we're going to do this song. And he went right into Peggy Sue. And I was just absolutely shocked. I was just stunned. A little embarrassed in the beginning, and then I thought, nobody knows who I am. And I was absolutely thrilled that they were doing as well as they were doing it, and doing what they wanted to do, because that's all they had wanted to do in high school. So it was, you know, their lives were going in the direction that they wanted it to. But to have him perform Peggy Sue and That'll Be the Day, it was the only performance, professional performance, I got to see them do before we lost him. I was at the recording sessions that came after that. But I didn't get to go to any more performances. So it became an incredibly special memory for me.
Oh, absolutely. Peggy, go ahead, Gary.
I'm sorry.
No.
Okay, I was just going to say, you know, Peggy Sue, you went to high school with these guys, okay? I think Buddy might have, I know Buddy was older, but tell the audience the very first time you met Buddy Holly, what happened?
Well, I was a sophomore, my sophomore year in Lubbock High. And I was coming out of the back door going to the band room, because I play alto saxophone. And this guy was coming in carrying a guitar and amp, and he just knocked me down on my fanny. You know, my can-cans went up, and my books went everywhere. And he ran over there, and he looked at me, and he said, "Boy, are you hurt?" And I said, "No." And he said, "Well, I don't have time to pick you up, but you sure are pretty." And he just took off for the back of the stage, you know. So I got up and picked up my books, and a girl came over, and she said, "That was Buddy Holly." And I said, "That was Buddy Holly?" And she said, "Yeah, that's who that was." Well, I had heard Buddy on radio. He had a radio show here in Lubbock on Sunday afternoon at K-Day. And so I knew what he sounded like, but I didn't know what he looked like. So that was my first meeting with him. And the second meeting was a double date that I had, Jerry Allison, and I had with him and a girlfriend of his. And when I got in the car, he started laughing. Mm-hmm. And I started laughing because of what had occurred. And Jerry Allison got in the car, and he said, "Well, you know, what's really so funny about all this?" And he said, because I already met Peggy Sue, and I've already overwhelmed her. And he had a great sense of humor, so indeed he had. So
yeah,
that's kind of how that started.
I was going to say, it almost sounded like he had just a very small touch of arrogance about him, that kind of comment, but it sounds like that was just his kind of humor. Buddy didn't, from what you're describing, you know, he never took himself over seriously.
He never did. And the thing that, if you walked in, if he had met you or you had planned on a session with him, he would always be the first one to thank you for your contribution and for him being a part of it. And you would think that you and he were the very best of friends. But he was just that kind of guy. And usually he never forgot. He never forgot who you were.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And when you knew Buddy Holly, I imagine you got to, at that time, you got to hang around really with the rock and roll royalty. Everyone from Waylon Jennings to you name it, you kind of crossed paths with.
Well, I grew up with him. Now, Waylon Jennings was born in Alton, Texas on June 15th, I think, 1936 or 32, I'm not sure. I was born in Alton, Texas, June 15th, 1940. So we all grew up together, from Littlefield to Lubbock and that area.
So very small world. Definitely very small world. And that's a lot of talent to have. You know, Texas has turned out some of the finest artists, rock and roll-wise, country-wise, even some blues musicians that are out there.
Oh, we've had fabulous artists, and I went to school with Claudette Frady. Do you know who that is? Or was? That turned out to be Mrs. Roy Orbison. And I'd walk out of school, Roy Orbison
would be
sitting there in the car to pick her up.
And there's Roy.
We had Peggy Sue and Claudette, two of the rock goddesses mm-hmm. in the same high school, the two guys who are going to change music history, the incredible voice of Roy Orbison.
Yeah, didn't get even.
Buddy Holly. Amazing, isn't it?
Oh,
small world.
Yeah. To be there at that time would have been just something. Well, you know, I might get a little bit of hate mail. They don't make music like they used to anymore. Back in Buddy Holly's day, or even The Doors, or Elvis, or anyone else, they did a little thing called play their own instruments. And I see that dying.
And use their own vocals.
I see that dying slowly but surely.
It's not rock and roll anymore. Not unless you have, you know, huge hair and skin-tight pants. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Yeah. But what you got to remember is who tells you it's rock and roll. And right now, everything is corporation. It's not the DJs and the regions
who
broke acts and brought them national. I think you'll agree with me on that, won't you, Peggy Sue?
Oh, yeah. And the big thing, too, to me, and I'm not a musician, I'm not an artist, but I am a dancer, and I am a listener, and I was the record buyer, okay? So, but the big thing to me was that everything now is digital. So while you may have the greatest song in the world there, you're not going to feel that vibration like you did with analog.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not the same.
Amen.
Yeah, they're asking, Gary, what decade were you born in?
Me?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was born in the 50s. I was born in the 50s. So I was a little too young for Elvis. I remember going to the drive-in with my parents and listening to doo-wop music on the radio. But, you know, I was hit
full in the face by the Beatles because I was in junior high. And that was, you know, I appreciated Elvis, but the Beatles and the British Invasion just swept me away. And a lot of artists I discovered later, because I'll tell you, radio is so phenomenal. It's what is played in a region. And the region I grew up in was not exactly as hip as I'd like it to be, because it was a lot of Chuck Jackson and a lot of Motown, which is nothing wrong with it. I love it. But I would visit my aunt in Jacksonville, Florida, and there was a station down there called WAPE. And when you went across the line from Georgia into Florida, I would just turn that station on, and you'd hear Johnny Weissmuller scream because it was the Big Ape. And, you know, I would hear music down there like the Doors and Hendrix, and I'd bring it back to my friends who were culturally deprived. So I'd bring the albums back and introduce it to them. And I know it made a great deal in my music education, was going to different areas and listening and understanding the power of radio and the power of DJs. And I think that's it. Instead of having a playlist that everybody plays the same, I think it's good to have somebody who breaks regional acts, because that's how Buddy, that's how Elvis, that's how everybody came about, and that's how music persevered, even in Great Britain. I mean, this is what created. You start with the grassroots, and you create the legends and the stars.
I totally agree with that. Oh, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It all begins in the basement, as it were, you know, of rock and roll, you know, where you can really get to the grassroots of it. Like Gary was saying, it's the absolutely, well, brass tacks, as they say, right there in the beginning. And Peggy Sue, this has been an absolute honor and a privilege for us to have you on the show with us. And you know, it's just been, wow, I'm speechless. I don't get speechless often. If anyone listens to me on radio,
no,
I'm not very speechless. Not
already, shut up.
Well, it's my honor. Thank you.
You know, and would you be able to hang around a little bit longer? Would you be able to go for the other side of the break? Maybe talk a little bit more?
Oh,
okay,
yeah.
Great. We have to go ahead. We have to run the break right now. And we come back, more Gary Patterson, Peggy Sue, and feel free to call in, people. Not a problem. Peggy Sue would if you're up to it, Peggy would absolutely love to talk to you guys.
Oh, let's see.
Get the tools you need to create content for every design discipline in one offering, the Adobe Creative Suite 3 Master Collection. The Master Collection combines the latest versions of Adobe InDesign, Photoshop Extended, Illustrator, Acrobat 8 Professional, Flash Professional, Dreamweaver, Fireworks, Contribute, After Effects Professional, Premiere Pro, Encore, and Soundboot. And when it comes to audio, Adobe Audition software is the all-in-one tool set for professional audio production. Whether you are recording, mixing, editing, or mastering. And the HVRN Corporation is a proud beta tester of Adobe software. Thinking multimedia? Think Adobe.com.
for professional meters for your next investigation? Look no further than Alpha Lab Scientific Instruments, makers of AC and DC milligauss meters, earth magnetometers, and the widely used Tri-Field Natural EM meter. This meter actually detects changes in extremely weak static electric and magnetic fields, and signals with both a tone and movement of a needle-type gauge if either the electric or magnetic field changes from previous levels. A must-have for any paranormal researcher. For all your field meter needs, visit Alpha Lab Scientific Instruments at trifield.com. TRIfield.com.
You're listening to your home of stimulating talk radio. Airstrike Radio.
Welcome back to Airstrike Radio. That's right. It is Tuesday night, and we have the incomparable. Well, okay, we know who he is. It's our Gary Patterson, but even almost bigger. I don't want to say almost because I don't know. We have Peggy Sue. That's right, the Peggy Sue. I mean, this is just rocking my world. I'm absolutely in awe of Peggy Sue being here with us because this is the same Peggy Sue that we heard how many times in multiple songs. She was the inspiration. I know, man. That this is really, this show right here is rocking the socks off right now. And I want to thank both of you for coming on, spending a little bit of time with us humble radio hosts.
Absolutely.
We're having my day.
We had a bad day here today. Not anymore. No.
That's right. Everything's better.
Well, it's certainly my pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, well, Todd, did you have any questions? I've been kind of hogging the limelight here.
I'm telling you what, just like you, for the first time, I can't believe this. I'm speechless. Everything that hit us, it's like, let's give Gary a show.
No kidding.
I'll tell you what, I've got some questions, and I think your audience would love to know this. You know, first of all, Peggy Sue, you were one of the attendants at Buddy's wedding, and he got married shortly after you and Jerry Allison, and you went on a double honeymoon to Acapulco.
That's right.
It was very close. Mm-hmm. And, I mean,
We got married July 22nd in Honey Grove, Texas, and Buddy and Maria Lana got married in Lubbock, Texas, on, I think, August the 14th.
And, you know, there's a very famous photo that was made, it looked like in a restaurant, maybe in a hotel, with you guys sitting at a table, and Buddy has those famous black glasses, but it looks like they were sunglasses, you know, because it looks like the lenses were tinted.
They were dark.
Right, and I got to do this because I know these guys are going to want to hear this. And Peggy, we're so close. I know you're going to share this with us, but just for my benefit, you know what I'm going to ask?
I can just feel it. I can just feel it coming.
That's right. Tell them why you were thrown out of the hotel in Acapulco, the whole group of you.
They threw you out?
Thrown out.
We were thrown out of the hotel.
Little party going on there, Peggy Sue?
Oh, yeah, well, do tell.
Well, no, it was a very isolated party. We had two cabanas, and they were, like, together but separate, and we had our own swimming pool. And Buddy had said all along, well, we have complete privacy. We just have complete privacy. We can do anything we want to do. And it was the Pink Flamingo in Acapulco. And so I got bored during the night and went skinny dipping in the pool. Now, in my own defense, I grew up in Lubbock, Texas, and we didn't have a swimming pool, okay? And I didn't know the light went on and went off in the pool. So I guess I probably was quite a spectacle out there in the pool that evening. But at any rate, the next morning, we woke up with the hotel people banging on the door telling us that we were going to have to move.
Well,
Buddy came over and he said, the next time you start to take your clothes off, let me know. And with that, he said, "We'll find another hotel." Okay, I'm sorry.
Oh my gosh!
But it didn't put me in favor with Maria Elena or Jerry L.
Oh my gosh! Well, I would love to open up the phone lines for Peggy Sue if you're willing, Peggy. If you're willing to take a couple calls, the number is 877-216-9987. That's the toll free. Feel free to call 877-216-9987 or outside the United States. 218 or 618-421-4280. I'm laughing at that story. I never would have.
I've got images that I am keeping.
That's right. Head. You can't make me get rid of those now. They're locked in there.
And guys, we need to bring up that Piggy Sue has a book, and it's called Whatever Happened to Piggy Sue. And you can order this book. Peggy, why don't you give them your web address or where they can pick up your book?
Yeah, the only way you can get it is through P as in Peggy Guerin, G-E-R-R-O-N, at AOL.com. That's my email.
Oh, good deal.
Let me ask you, Peggy, too, for the listeners up here, would you be willing to sell sign copies of the book for them? Could you do that?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, my gosh.
So you can get the authentic
Peggy Sue autograph. Yeah, just say you heard Joel and Todd show, and yeah.
Oh, man.
How about that, guys?
Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you so very much.
Wow.
And you know what?
You're welcome.
You know what?
We
actually have a little something for you too, Peggy. We have the song. We have the song,
yes.
And we're gonna go ahead and play the song right now.
It has been.
Oh, thank you.
Without Peggy, my Peggy Sue. Oh, well, I love you, girlies. I love you, Peggy Sue. Peggy Sue, Peggy Sue. Oh, how my heart yearns for you, oh, Peggy. My Peggy Sue. Oh, well, I love you, girlies. I love you.
It's fresh today as it was then. I mean, it's fabulous.
Yep. By popular demand,
it's a great song, isn't it?
Everybody
is
asking Peggy for you to repeat that email where they can get that great book. We're getting pinged big time to hear it again.
Okay. It's P as in Peggy, Guerin, G-E-R-R-O-N, at AOL.com.
Everybody, get a copy of that awesome book.
I've got the book. I've read it. And the stories that we're talking about come from the book. And there's plenty more. And, you know, before Peggy leaves, I think that the one thing we need to bring up is that, you know, next week in a few days is February 3rd, the anniversary of the day the music died. And Peggy, you were there. And I would like you to maybe talk to Joel and everyone about, you know, exactly when did you find out about the plane crash? And tell us a little bit about the funeral services that you attended and some of the things there. I think everybody would be interested in hearing that.
Well, we were not on that last tour. We were in Lubbock, Texas, Jerry Allison and Joby and myself. They were not with Buddy on that last tour. And Buddy had hired Carl Bunch and Waylon Jennings and Tommy Allsup were performing as the Crickets with him. And so things were strained between all of us, which I explain in the book about their different relationships. Mm-hmm. And we were woke up that next morning about the, radio announcers talking about the Crickets and Buddy Holly were dead from a plane crash. And it's a type of thing that it's so stunning that you can't wrap your head around it at all. And so Jerry got up and started making phone calls, and he called Mrs. Holly, Ella, his mother, Buddy's mother, and she confirmed it. She said, yes, that's right. She said they had announced it on the radio first before calling her, but that there had been a plane crash and that the Big Bopper and little Richie Valens and the young pilot, Mr. Peterson, and Buddy were all dead. Oh. And Larry Holly, his brother, Buddy's brother, and a brother-in-law, Mr. Weir, were on their way up there to identify the bodies. So the funeral didn't take place until about February 7th. It took a few days for Maria Elena to get into Lubbock. Mm-hmm. And Mrs. Holly planned the whole entire funeral. The church was terribly crowded, and so was the cemetery. It was just mind-boggling, the whole thing was. And Maria Elena returned to New York that day, and I think that the rest of us were just like frozen. We were just trying to feel and try to figure out what was going on with our lives at that point. I think that's the best way I can explain. You probably I do a better job in the book explaining it, but there were hard feelings. I mean, strained feelings between the group. And Norman Petty was at the funeral. Phil Everly had flown in for the funeral, who is a dear, dear friend. And so we helped Miss Holly take, we helped put Betty away. Oh. And was probably one of the more difficult things I've had to do. Yeah.
And Peggy, another thing is, there's another Peggy Sue song by Buddy, and it was called Peggy Sue Got Married. And it's a very lamentful song. So in two songs, you realize the close relationship you did have with Buddy Holly. And I know that a lot of people like the paranormal, and I know that that's one thing. And I want everyone to know that you've had a number of psychic experiences, and I know that you told me that you actually had a dream to warn Buddy about flying in a small plane. And then I want you to talk about, if the guys don't mind, I'd like you to talk about your home on the Hollywood Hills and a very interesting phone call you received.
Yeah, well, I had the dream three times, and I told Jerry and I told Buddy not to rent a small plane because I was really concerned about it. And I have, during my childhood, when I would dream something and it would be reoccurring, it usually happened somewhere around that time. It had to have to do with my life. Of course, I'm sure maybe that's why I had the dreams. But at any rate, it's the intuition that I think God gives us off to kind of help us take that next step.
It's such a hard thing to lose that much young talent all at once.
It's devastating.
It had to have been, you know, it's like Gary mentioned, it really almost did kill rock and roll.
I thought it probably had, because we had everybody was in that plane. Richie Valens, who was the first Latin young, precious artist.
Yeah, very good.
Big Bopper, who was humorous with rock and roll. And then we had Buddy Holly, and I thought probably that they had all struggled so hard to get the music out there where people liked it and were buying the records and enjoyed it, because even though they're having a good time performing and that's what they want to do, it's still a business, and they were having to learn the business so they could continue to do what they love best.
Yep, yep. Absolutely. And we have a caller on the line. Hello, caller. Welcome to Airstrike Radio, live with Peggy Sue and our Gary Patterson.
Yeah, hi, Joel. It's Phil.
Hi,
Phil.
Phil,
how are you?
How are you doing, big guy?
Pretty good. I am a huge Beatles fan. I have been, and I'm old enough that I was 9, 10 years old, and I watched the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show when they first came over here. And the thing I'm curious about is, what do they think of the Paul is Dead thing?
Oh, well, you know, I wrote the book, The Walrus is Paul. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you that when I wrote the book, I grew up at that time period. I remember hearing the clues on radio, and I thought it was fascinating. But a lot of people don't understand that this was 1969. John Kennedy had been assassinated in 63. Martin Luther King was assassinated. Bobby Kennedy was assassinated. We lived with the concept that there were inner workings in our government that would probably try to take away any influence that would, the Beatles may have been a threat to that influence when they came out against the Vietnam War. Now, even though that may sound sort of ridiculous and conspiracy theory oriented to a new generation, they didn't grow up in the 60s and they didn't watch this. They didn't know about the Gulf of Tonkin resolution. So having that mindset, it made it really explode. But, you know, you can look at it three ways. You can look at it that all these clues were just manufactured by mass hysteria and created by DJs. Or you can say it was guided looking, guided listening. Somebody finds an album cover, they say you can look at the yellow flowers, and it spells out Paul question mark on the Sgt. Pepper's cover with the three black strings for the bass
right.
That were missing. And you can look at it and say, okay, yeah, I see it now. But, you know, there's another one, and I honestly believe, you know, a lot of people get onto me because I don't jump on conspiracy theories like Elvis is alive and all that. But I honestly can tell you, I do believe that the Beatles actually planted some of those clues. I have no doubt about it. And the most devastating clue to prove this was the bass drum on the Sgt. Pepper's cover. If you know the history, Peter Blake designed the entire cover, but the drum skin was designed by a painter whose name was Joe Epgrave. Now, you take E-P-T-H-G-R-A-V-E. It sounds very mysteriously like epitaph and grave. And if you look at the Sgt. Pepper cover, you see the word Beatles in red hyacinth, and you see the dug-up dirt that looks like a grave. So it would be a perfect location for a tombstone. A tombstone tells you who died and the day of death. If you look in the crowd, you'll see Lewis Carroll, who wrote Alice's Adventures Through the Looking Glass. Take a straight-edge mirror, put it in the center of Lonely Hearts. Now, here's the thing. There were two drum skins designed for the Sgt. Pepper cover. The only thing that's similar in both is the phrase Lonely Hearts, the exact same font, everything in the center. But when that mirror goes in the center, it spells out a hidden message. Starting from the left, you get numeral I, which is 1, then O-N-E, which is 1 again. Then you get numeral I-X, which is 9. And then it says, he die. And between he and die is a diamond-shaped arrow that points straight up to Paul McCartney and down to the grave. And when you read this, you put it together. Some people come up with the idea that 1-1-1 X'd out, you know, he died. But that's not, doesn't go with the tombstone. The two ones go together. It makes 11. Then 9. The 11th month, 9th day, November the 9th, he died. November the 9th, 1966, there's records of a car accident McCartney was involved with. It's in at least three
right,
people.
I remember that.
You remember that? You also look at the day,
oh,
November
yeah.
1966, it's a Wednesday, and the accident supposedly occurred at 5 o'clock in the morning. You can look on a calendar. On the back of the cover, Sgt. Pepper's was the only album, the first album ever, to have lyrics on the back. And George Harrison is pointing with his thumb to the first line of the song She's Leaving Home, which says, Wednesday morning at 5 o'clock. Now, the question is, it was genius to put that there. Who did it? My research says that Mal Evans suggested they call it Lonely Hearts, and Mal Evans is one of the roadies and one of the insiders with the Beatles. But the question is, why did they put it on Sgt. Pepper? So my thought is that, and to give you the other clue, in the song The Walrus Was Paul, or not the song The Walrus Was Paul, Glass Onion, when Lennon sings, here's another clue for you all, The Walrus Was Paul. Well, to refer
yeah,
to another
Glass
clue,
Onion.
exactly off Glass Onion, off the White Album. The White Album was recorded in 68. None of these Beatle clues were ever discovered until 69, a year later. It's like they were hinting that there were other clues. So here's what I think. I think that Sgt. Pepper's was such a revolutionary album that changed everything. And you remember how important that album was because it was influenced by the Beach Boys' Pet Sounds. When that album came out, it was a risk. What if the Beatles' public didn't like it? I mean, Revolver was showing the change, but Sgt. Pepper's took it a whole new direction. So what if the album flopped? Then what if the Beatles could say, well, you know, Paul was dead, and there's clues on the album. People would go out, buy the album, look for the clues, and look what happened in 69. All the Beatle albums jumped up on the charts because people were looking for the Paul is dead rumors. And Apple replenished its coffers when they were really hurt financially in 69. And the Beatles have never said anything about it, and I know that Paul has fun with it because he had an album called Paul is Live, where he's walking across Abbey Road in the same type suit that was used on the Abbey Road cover. And then on the Simpsons show in 67, if you listen to the end of it, when Lisa wants to become a vegetarian, and Paul tells her, if you listen to the end of Maybe I'm Amazed backwards, it has a ripping recipe for lentil soup, and at the end of the Simpsons, you hear this backwards, you play it, and you hear McCartney say, take one clove of garlic, add one cup of pepper. He goes through the whole recipe of lentil soup, and at the very end he says, oh, by the way, I'm alive.
Whoa.
So I really believe the Beatles planted some of the clues. I think hysteria played a major role. I think that the reference that walrus was Greek for corpse, obviously that's wrong, but it didn't matter if it was right or wrong. It was accepted. And it was like sitting around a tribal fire in Beowulf and listening to someone with the knowledge, because everyone started trying to put things together. Mm-hmm. And if it came from the Tibetan Book of the Dead or whatever, people accepted it and became the greatest, well, probably the second greatest hoax in American culture. Probably the first would be the War of the Worlds with Orson Welles. And then the Beatles second.
Yeah.
I don't know if any other band today, you'll agree with me,
that's
ever
the thing.
Pull that
that's
off.
That's the thing. I live in Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And supposedly this started with a college student at the University of Michigan and a DJ here. I think his name was Russ Gibb. I might be wrong
Russ
on that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And the college guy's name was Joe.
Motus.
Wow. Wow, guys.
And I remember the magazines coming out. But then I've read where if you look on the cover of Abbey Road, the license plate says 21, and they always say, or 20.
28 is.
Excuse me, 28 if. But then they said in Britain, that's 281 F.
Mm-hmm.
Also on Sgt. Pepper, when you open it up, and it's the picture of the forum, Paul's got an armband on, this is OPD, and everybody was saying that means officially pronounced dead. And then they came out and said, no, that came from the Ontario Police Department.
Right.
Wow,
but you know what the funny thing was about that? It's not OPD, it's OPP. It's Ontario Provincial Police. Now, what interests me, when McCartney said it stood for perhaps the Ontario Police Department, why didn't he say it was OPP? He knew that. And then in the 1980s, McCartney comes on a radio interview and says, they ask him if he was a walrus. He said, yes, I was always a walrus. I picked up this walrus head and put it on. Big deal. Well, on the Life magazine article, Paul is Alive, he said it was John who was dressed as a walrus. So there's a little revisionism in Beatle history when it comes to it. And I have a friend at ABC. When the Beatles anthology came out, he interviewed McCartney. And McCartney said, well, and this is exact quote, McCartney says, well, it became a bit of a game in the old Beatle days to put little hidden things in. And when you watch Free as a Bird, the Beatle video, you will see over 90 references to Beatle songs that they hid in the video. So if you're bored, go get the Beatles anthology, watch Free as a Bird, and see how many Beatle lyrics and Beatle titles of songs you can find in that one song.
Wow. Wow. Well, guys, we're running way over on break. With that being said, we'll be right back with more R. Gary Patterson right after this.
ready for some rollicking adventure? In Scotty Roberts' book, The Rollicking Adventures of Tam O'Hare, join Irish Rabbit, Tam O'Hare, and his young squirrel squire, Horatio McNutt, as they journey through Scotland of the mid-1500s seeking a small child who's been stolen by the fairy folk. Crafty raccoon pirates, conniving noble wolves, conflicted royal foxes and self-serving religious badgers all stand in the way as their quest brings them headlong into high seas action and supernatural intrigue. The Rollicking Adventures of Tam O'Hare is in bookstores everywhere and at barnesandnoble.com. This hardcover, lushly illustrated chapter book is the first book in the Tam O'Hare series. But hang on to your sabers. Book 2, Tam O'Hare and the Banshee of Ballyglen Morrow, is coming later this year. So swash your buckle and prepare yourself for a historically rollicking, swaggeringly supernatural adventure. Visit tamohare.com to learn more. You'll never trust a raccoon with a sword again.
Our hidden cameras caught Mrs. Helen Grouse of Columbus, Ohio, in the act of shoplifting at an A&P store. We asked other shoppers if they'd be deterred from shoplifting if we punished Mrs. Grouse by killing her. Let's listen.
Excuse me, ma'am. Have you ever shoplifted?
Well, yes, I have.
Oh?
Yeah, on occasion I snitched a can of salmon or a jar of artichoke or something.
Well, let me ask you this.
What?
Here's a woman we just caught shoplifting.
Oh, boy.
Now, if we were to punish her by killing her, right now, would that convince you not to shoplift?
I don't know. It's kind of an impulse sort of thing, and I really doubt if you'd kill her. I mean, I'd have to say I'd probably shoplift again.
I see. Well, watch this. Now, what have we done?
Well, you just shot her in the head.
And would you say that she's dead?
Well, her whole head is blown off. Yeah, she's dead all right, yeah.
Now, let me ask you again. Do you think we've convinced you not to shoplift?
Well, I have to say I'd never shoplift again.
Why do you say that?
Well, you just proved to me that you'd kill someone if they shoplifted. I saw it with my own eyes.
You're not just saying that.
No. I'm really convinced.
You won't change your mind?
Nope. I'll never shoplift again.
At A&P, we won't stop trying till we make you say...
We are...
With Vonage, you can enjoy unlimited local and long-distance calling for as low as $24.99 a month. Vonage gives you more than just a great price. Free calls to landlines in select European countries. International calling for as low as pennies per month. 25-plus premium features including voicemail, caller ID, and call waiting. 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can keep your existing number for life. Simply visit www.vonage.com/friend and enter the HVRN Vonage line, 618-215-2136. And not only can you help Haunted Voices Radio, you can receive up to 2 free months of service. Again, just visit vonage.com/friend and enter 618-215-2136 for your free 2 months of service. And thanks for listening from the Haunted Voices Radio Network.
What do you guys think of Airstrike Radio?
It's the only one I listen to.
I just like everything about it. It's just really funny because, I mean, I like to stay up with current events, but at the same time, I also like to laugh, so it's the best of both worlds.
Simple fact of the matter, they're, for one, down home, they like to go about doing community stuff, and then, of course, just the wildness that they have in there.
Definitely turned on.
Basically, they just do and say whatever they want.
They always are coming up with new stuff, new twists.
Thank you for your feedback. Remember to keep listening right here on Airstrike Radio Online as well as HVRNC.com. That's the Haunted Voices Radio Network. Airstrike Radio coming right back at you. That's right. Infesting the airwaves, not only all over the world, but you know what? We're having a great time. Well, why don't you go ahead and tell everybody there, Todd, where our newest radio home is as well.
Whoa. Yeah, we're over there at KelseyLive.com. Kelsey Grammer's listening to the show. I mean, he loves the show. Todd's listening. They just said some great news in there, and we're going to release that here later on another show. So stay tuned for that.
And rumor has it Mr. Bob Dylan himself is tuning in to listen to this one. But we even have bigger news than that. Mr. R. Gary Patterson has agreed to go, yes, folks, yes, overtime. That's right. We are. He is going overtime. That's right, Gary. You have gone above and beyond for us and with us, not only bringing Peggy Sue on, but bringing your knowledge. People are abuzz right now. They want to know, is Elvis really buried at Graceland?
Oh, my gosh. You know, first of all, this is probably the second great urban legend, I guess, after Paul is dead. When the Elvis thing happened, there were a number of books that came out, and everyone was sort of shocked. There were photographs of Elvis, supposed cassette tapes of Elvis's voice, and you have two camps. And let me tell you, there's passion in both camps. The camps that believe Elvis is alive, they're not going to take any other answer that Elvis actually faked his death, that he went into witness protection because he and Nixon had formed a good relationship, and he had turned in some major drug dealers, and to save his life, you know, he went into witness protection, and he's probably in Kalamazoo, Michigan, eating those greasy cheeseburgers and those fried banana peanut butter sandwiches that he loved, but, you know, and, which is bad enough. But, you know, it's still, there were pieces that fell together, and there were urban legends about the coffin. You remember the funeral where the coffin was so heavy, and the corpse inside was a wax dummy and had an air conditioning unit in it. It was supposed to, you know.
Gee.
So I'll tell you how I do this. You know, I'm blessed because I get to know a lot of people who, well, you know, they do the music, they're stars, and they're just down to earth. They're great people. And one of the greatest moments, I got to meet Carl Perkins. And, you know, Carl wrote Blue Suede Shoes. And one of the nicest guys you'd ever meet is like your next-door neighbor, true Southern gentleman. And so when I got to know him for the weekend, and he told me some great stories, by the way. I mean, well, I'll share those with you if you'd like to hear one of the strange ones. But
oh,
he told me, he said, I asked him, I said, Carl, I got to ask you, is Elvis dead? And he looked at me and said, Gary, Elvis is dead. I was there. I was at the funeral. Elvis is gone. And when he said that, I never thought about it again. This was in 97, which unfortunately was, what, 20 years after Elvis died. But, I mean, the stuff was still pouring out. And everything that became a great urban legend, like, for instance, you know, why is his name misspelled on his grave?
Mm.
You know, Aaron is misspelled. And the rumor was that Elvis was superstitious, as was his father, Vernon, and they did not want to cheat fate or attempt fate. So they misspelled his name, because he really is not there. But the real story is that his name was misspelled on a birth certificate, and he tried to get more into a biblical spelling of it. So that was the biblical spelling. That's why it was placed there. The reason the coffin was so heavy is because I think it was made out of copper, and it was very heavy metal, and that's why it was made. And the people who know Elvis the best, I mean, first of all, do you know how much money could be made if Elvis Presley was alive and somebody turned him in? I mean, millions of dollars. Nobody can hide like that.
Yeah.
And I was involved with a documentary that was, Is Elvis Alive? And they flew me out to Hollywood, and they filmed me. And the thing was never released, but they were going to offer like a $1 million reward if Elvis came forward, like Elvis needed the money. You know, Graceland made more after he died than when he was alive.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember doing this, and they were talking about, well, you know, Elvis said that he would never outlive his mother, and he died at the same age. And that's not true. I mean, there's so many things. It's like Paul is dead. I think Elvis was 42, his mother was 44, something like that.
Well, Gary,
they died, so
I hate to interrupt you, but I have one up on you.
No.
Tell me.
I have the secret Elvis tapes.
Oh, Joel. Oh, geez.
I do. No, yeah. I do. I have the actual secret Elvis tapes. Would you like to hear them?
There's a time and a place for everything, and damn it, Joel just found it.
Well, I did. I've been waiting to unleash this thing forever.
I have them, too.
You do. You do. You have this one.
And
right
I bought
here.
It when the book came out. But now they found out that the voice on the tape was actually
No. You're going to have to listen.
By the fan club to do it. So then I just tear it out. You know? It's terrible.
Well, here we go, and no further ado, the Elvis tapes.
The Elvis tapes.
You've bought his records, you've seen his film, you've even purchased the Dayglo Velvet Memorial paintings at the gas station. As a true Elvis fan, you think you've heard it all, but wait, there's more. Now you can buy secret recordings of Elvis's last telephone conversations. Yes, it's the Elvis tapes.
Hello, baby. This is Elvis. And I want you to come over right now. Make me a big peanut butter and then a sandwich. A peanut butter and then a sandwich will get me through the night.
You'll hear Elvis in his most intimate moments.
Hello, Pizza Man, Pizza. Yeah, this is the Elvis. Won't you bring me over a double large pies. Don't make it, three. Don't make it six, double cheese. Yeah, I'm hungry. I'm alone. And I'm hungry.
And you'll hear Elvis reveal how he really feels about the one true love of his life.
I want you back. I want you back in my life, baby. And on your way back, would you pick up some donuts, please? Big jelly, cream donuts, crullers, cheese, Danish too. I love my big honey glazed donuts. Without them, I can't do.
The Elvis Tapes.
Oh, give me more donuts.
Available now in drugstores everywhere.
I love to eat a little more.
And there we are, the Elvis Tapes.
Well, I have to admit, I do not have that one.
I do not have that one.
I'll email you that one, so you can, you know.
Nah, that's okay.
I have been waiting my whole life to be able to play that particular spoof.
Well, you know, talking about the Elvis thing, I mean, I've been on Coast to Coast with this, and George really likes the story. So usually on Elvis's birthday or the day Elvis dies, we usually have a little show on Elvis. And it's like everybody's coming up Elvis, you know, Elvis's brother, Elvis's daughter, Elvis's sister. I mean, everybody's trying to get DNA evidence to prove they're related to the Presleys. And the issue is that the estate's pretty well settled so that nobody can actually claim. But one of the interesting stories, I mean, there's a little lady who lives around Graceland, and she writes me and she says, listen, I see Elvis every week. So, I mean, and I know Elvis, and I see him every week. So if he's still hanging out in Memphis, it's kind of pretty bad if you're on witness protection. But, I mean, there are people who honestly believe it. But one interesting story is, if you remember when Elvis died, there was an attempt to steal his body. Do you remember that?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, I do
and
remember
the problem was that Vernon, his father, wanted Elvis buried at Graceland, and he wanted his wife Gladys to be buried there. And he told the Memphis Chamber of Commerce, you cannot bury people in your backyard, okay? You have to have all kinds of permits to do that. So Vernon's argument was that they could not protect his son's body in a public cemetery. So there was an attempt to steal Elvis's body, and the grave robbers were caught. And of course, you know, they said they'd opened the coffin, they saw the body. But the strange thing was that Vernon Presley had paid them to botch the grave robbery so the city of Memphis would allow them to bury Elvis in Graceland. And that was a story told by one of the grave robbers. And it was in this documentary, Is Elvis Alive? So that's kind of interesting that Vernon would have pulled that off so that he could have his son buried safely at Graceland.
Wow. Well, yeah, because, yeah, the story goes that they hired some thug. Wasn't that right? Some local thug. Like,
yeah.
Like you've said, you know, like we're just discussing a little bit, that they hired a local thug to go. Number one, you get the help that you pay for.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
But you got to remember, I don't think Vernon actually wanted the body stolen, taken out of the coffin. He just wanted it to be an attempt to move it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I guess you would say that might be the number one Elvis collector if he did collect Elvis's body.
That would be right up there with Michael Jackson and the alleged Elephant Man remains.
That's a little
psycho. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and speaking of Mr. Jackson, have you heard anybody channeling him?
No, but I have heard there were channels made from Elvis. I know there was a German psychic who claimed that he had contacted Elvis in the afterlife, and that Elvis had been very busy writing songs, and that he had channeled the songs through this German psychic, and he was trying to get a record deal so that he could sing the songs that Elvis had given him. Now, what's interesting about that is Elvis had never written a song in his entire life. You know, Elvis wasn't a songwriter. You know, he was a fabulous singer. And Lieber and Stoller and Doc Thomas, all those guys were the ones who wrote a lot of his early hits. But, you know, it's kind of interesting that channeling him. John Lennon is supposedly channeling people. And Bill Harry's a good friend of mine, who was one of John Lennon's best friends. And he was telling me a story. You remember the story where John had told Julian that if he were to die first and there was an afterlife, he would cause a white feather to float? Do you remember that story?
Yes, I do.
Okay, when Julian started his own career and he became very famous, but he was very insecure. And in London, he was scheduled to play the Royal Albert Hall. And he just didn't feel that he had the talent to get up there and do it. He's extremely nervous. Well, the day of the performance, a box came. And in the box was a Native American headdress that had been stolen from John Lennon when the Beatles were awarded those on their American tour. But they'd found it. They sent it to Cynthia. And when they opened the package, all these white feathers flew into the air. And Julian was convinced that that was a sign from his father that there was an afterlife and that he would be with him. And he went to the Royal Albert Hall and killed the show, did a fabulous performance. So the white feather, that's where it starts.
Wow. No, yeah. I mean, I was like to say, it's wow at some of this stuff because there's just so many legends and so many places this goes. I mean, right down to the... I recently saw a movie about Grand Parsons where they stole his body. Now, is that... They say that's a true story. Is that a real true story?
Or it is a true story. When I was working with VH1, on VH1 Confidential, we actually have an interview with Phil Kaufman. Now, what had happened, Clarence White of the Byrds had been killed in a hit-and-run accident, and Parsons and Kaufman had attended his funeral. It was in a Catholic church, I believe, and it was a very, you know, ritualistic funeral. And supposedly the story goes that Parsons turned to Phil and he said, "Listen, if I'm to die first, I want you to make me a promise. Never put my body through this." He said, "Just take my body, take it out to Joshua Tree and burn it. Give me a Viking funeral." And Kaufman said, "Well, if I die first, then you do that for me." Well, Grand Parsons entered rock and roll heaven at Joshua Tree when he overdosed on morphine and tequila, which will do it for you. So when he died, they had his body to be sent back to New Orleans. Now, if you know anything about Grand Parsons was a trust fund baby. His family was very, very wealthy. They were from Waycross, Georgia. And his trust fund had sent him to Harvard. But he stayed like a year in Harvard, put a band together. I think it was the Incredible Submarine Band. They went from Harvard, Massachusetts to California. Parsons played with the Byrds, and then he started the Flying Burrito Brothers. I have a good friend, Barry Tashin, who played in the Flying Burrito Brothers. He also was in a group called Barry and the Remains, who opened up for the Beatles on their last tour. So he has an interesting life. But he also recorded on Parsons' albums. And Parsons had taken country music and embraced the psychedelic revolution and put it together. So when they were flying Parsons' body back to his stepfather, who Parsons did not care for, Kaufman remembered the pact. He rents a hearse that was painted in Day-Glow psychedelic colors. They go to the airport. Kaufman goes in and he says, "Listen, I represent the Parsons family, and they've changed their mind. They want me to take the body to Orange County, and we're going to fly it out of there." And he was amazed that the people at the airport let him have the body. And he had to sign some paper. So instead of signing Phil Kaufman, he signed Joe Nobody.
Joe Nobody. And they still handed Joe him the body?
And when they wheel the body out, a police car pulls right behind the hearse. And Kaufman was already drunk. So he says, "Oh, my God, we're about to be arrested. This is over." So what he does, he yells at the policeman and says, "Hey, buddy, give me a hand with this stiff." So the policeman comes up and helps him load the body in the hearse, backs out, lets the hearse go. So they start drinking along the way on their way to Joshua Tree, and they pull over to a gas station, and the attendant wants to know if they want regular or Ethel. In that day, so Ethel was the high test gas. And Kaufman turns around, looks at the coffin, and he says, "I don't know. Graham wants Ethel. Give us Ethel." So he fills a gas can up, and they pull up to Cat Rock. And when they pull over, they were so drunk and it was so dark they couldn't go any further. So they take the coffin out. They open up the coffin. There's Graham lying in the coffin. And Coffin's lecturing him. I said, "I told you not to drink. I told you not to use those drugs." Because Coffin was hanging out with the Stones, and I think he really thought he had Keith Richards' metabolism.
Good old Keith Richards.
They poured gasoline on the body, threw a match in, watched it go up with the ashes going up in the air. They get back in the hearse. They drive back to L.A. And then the news comes out in Rolling Stone that Graham Parsons' body had been stolen by a group of Satanists, and in a satanic ritual, he'd been burned in the desert. So eventually that wasn't true, obviously, and they found out it was Kaufman, so they arrested him. And when they brought him to court, I think they fined him $250. And the reason he was fined was for the theft of the coffin, because the body had no material value. And Kaufman said, "Well, if I'd known that, I would have kept the wrapper and dumped the corpse," you know? And there's a famous picture of Phil Kaufman. I got to tell you this, too. The body of Graham Parsons was flown to New Orleans. He's buried in New Orleans. And there's a picture I saw of Phil Kaufman. and he's standing on Parsons' grave, and he's got his foot on a shovel digging into the grave with his wry smile on his face. And the picture is engraved. It says, "Still digging Graham."
Wow.
That's a true story.
That's cool. That's cool. And I also want to remind everybody, we've been a little bit remiss in the phone call, giving out the numbers. So if you want to call, because we've just been in such awe of everything that's going on here tonight, 877-216-9987. That's right.
2987.
Yes, that's isn't that what it's...
What you'll get it.
It's 9987.
2987.
It is. Well, why didn't you give it there, big guy? You're the one with the 1-800 number.
I love it. Oh.
You know, you got Miller and you know.
Rum cake.
Yeah. We've all had our flaws. 877-216-2987. 877-216-2987. That's toll free. I love Joel.
Well, normally I'm used to 218-305-4676. That is the actual, real, really good line. That's like the bat phone. don't call that one, folks. Do not call that last one. Getting back to just kind of what, Gary, I got to ask, and I've always forgot to ask you this question. Every time I've hung up the phone with you, it's always been that one question. Oh, darn, I should ask. What is up with the Eagles and the Hotel California cover with Aleister Crowley, allegedly?
A great urban legend from the 70s, you know. Well, first of all, you got to remember, this is in the age of backward masking, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So when people usually ask me about the Eagles, the first thing I tell them, they'll ask me, they say, do you believe in backward masking? And the answer, of course, because there are backward tracks on records. And the very first backward track on a record is on the Beatles song Rain. And if you listen to the third verse of Rain, you hear John Lennon, it's almost like he's chanting, like, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
When you play it backwards, he says, when the rain comes, they run and hide their heads. He heard it backwards. He thought it sounded cool, so he told George Martin to put that verse backwards. And the Beatles had backward cymbals. They had backward guitar tracks, and that was a sign of the 60s. Mm-hmm. And then one of my favorites is ELO on Fire on High. It sounds like the satanic chant that you hear, but it's backwards at the beginning. When you turn it backwards, it says, the music is reversible. The time is not. Turn back. Turn back. And Jeff Lynne said the reason he said turn back was he figured if you were playing your record backwards, you're going to ruin your needle and your needle will fall off. So he said, turn back. Don't do that. So they had fun with it. But on the Hotel California, there's supposed to be a backward track where it says, oh, Satan, how he started his own religion. How nice.
Mm.
And the rumor was that the Hotel California was the Church of Satan in San Francisco. And the old brothel on California Avenue where the Church of Satan had taken over, that was the Hotel California. You can check out anytime you like, but you can never leave.
Right.
A reference to Jane Mansfield, who left the church. A curse was put on her boyfriend, Sam Brody, according to the legend. Anton LaVey, the head of the Church of Satan, told Jane not to be with him, that he had cursed him. She didn't listen too well. She was driving to Louisiana, and her car that was being driven, I think, by a chauffeur, underwent a spray truck that was spraying for mosquitoes. And the story goes that Jane was decapitated. At the same time, Anton LaVey in California was cutting out an article on the Church of Satan. When he turned it over, he noticed that it was Jane Mansfield, and he had cut off her head when he had cut off the article. So the idea of checking out anytime you like. Now, I'm going to tell you, Don Felder says that none of that's true. And Don Henley, who wrote the lyrics, says none of that's true at all. I mean, that's just coincidence. But the idea of Anton LaVey, this is where it gets interesting. If you look inside the picture, you'll see the Eagles standing in a hotel lobby with all these people around them. If you look on the balcony, you see this figure who's looking down with a black goatee. His head is shaved. He's dressed in black. And it looks like Anton LaVey, the head of the Church of Satan, therefore Hotel California. But what the Eagles say, and the people who did the album shoot, is that the guy in the balcony was an extra. He was supposed to be downstairs. He went to sleep on one of the chairs, very comfortable chair up on the balcony. And when they were taking the shot, he looked over the balcony and his picture's in it. So the actual story is, no, it's not Anton LaVey. But while Anton LaVey was alive, I'm sure he would have taken credit for it, you know, that he would have been there.
Because, well, he was very flamboyant anyway, so it just would have been a, hey, yeah,
well, he was,
I
know,
did that.
And you know, one of the funny things is that when he died, they faked his birth, his death certificate, so that he would have died on Halloween, and that wasn't true either. So I mean, there's a lot of misinformation.
That guy way back when, Anton.
Yeah.
He's
Anton LaVey.
Yeah, that was a good interview there. He was a little bit. Well, he's off.
Well, he's dead.
He's not what he wasn't. He wanted to definitely impose on everybody that he does not worship the devil, Satan. They're more animals like, well, they're just about like a bunch of giant Sasquatches running around. They don't shave or shower or anything. That kind
they don't shave, shower, or really care about their fellow man all that much.
Yeah, he's a little cranky.
Little mad.
Yeah.
A little cranky. That's an understatement. That's like St. Charles Manson was just a little nuts.
Yeah. Yes, slightly.
You know, slightly skewed off there, the mark. But, you know, now I'm getting hit now since, now what does Charles Manson, he has a connection, does he not, with the Beach Boys?
Well, actually he does. Dennis Wilson. And, you know, the story goes that Dennis Wilson, who was the brother of Brian and Carl, the younger brother, the drummer, was driving home one day, picks up two girls hitchhiking, takes them to his home. And I guess that's where drug, sex, and rock and roll comes in. But after they had left, he didn't think anything of it. He comes back late that night, and he notices the lights on in his house. He walks in, and it's packed with people. And one man comes out and introduces himself, says his name is Charles Manson, and that he's also a musician, he's a prophet, all of this. So, you know, it was kind of fun for Dennis Wilson hanging out there. Free love, the whole bit, but it was in his house, and they had stolen his new Mercedes and wrecked it. They had pawned his gold records, and he sort of got a little afraid. But the big mistake Dennis made was he introduced Charles Manson to Terry Melcher. Now, Terry Melcher was one of the great producers in Hollywood. He had, he did the Byrds. I think he did Paul Revere and the Raiders. He had recorded a number of songs. He was a great producer, and he had introduced Charles Manson to Terry. And Melcher heard it, and he thought he heard something he could sell. So Manson was convinced he had a record deal. Well, the record deal fell through. And then the Beach Boys did the unpardonable sin. They took one of Manson's songs, which was called Cease to Exist. They reworked it and turned it into Never Learn Not to Love. When Manson heard it, he was furious. Well, by that time...
Oh, I bet. He was in prison, though, wasn't he?
What? Yeah. Isn't that odd? Dennis Wilson had moved out of his house. He just left it, bought another place. So that's why Manson was looking for Terry Melcher. Now, Terry Melcher was living in the house on Celio Drive where Sharon Tate had just moved in. So the Manson family was looking to kill Terry Melcher. And when Sharon Tate and her friends were there that night, Manson and the followers just decided they'd give this message to Melcher that they were after him. And that's where the Helter Skelter murders came in. Dennis Wilson received a bullet in an envelope where they had found him. So he was terrified. And the story goes, Vincent Bugliosi says, who wrote the book Helter Skelter, that Dennis Wilson told him he destroyed the tapes that Manson made because, this is what Wilson said, they sounded unworldly. Spooky, huh? So that's the Manson story with the Beach Boys.
So really... Wow, I mean, the Beach Boys, they were a little nutty anyway, weren't they? Kind of, back in the day? You know, you hear stories about them being just a little nutty anyway.
Well, nutty, listen to the song Kokomo. What the hell was that about?
Well, you got to remember, Brian Wilson and the Beatles were a major competition. And when he wrote Pet Sounds, Paul McCartney heard it on his way back from New York to England. He said, oh my God, how are we going to top that album? Mm-hmm. So they came out with Sgt. Pepper's, and you can hear the influences of Pet Sounds with Sgt. Pepper's. Mm-hmm. But when Brian Wilson heard Sgt. Pepper's, he listened to it on his headphones for like hours and days. He stayed in bed for a year. He had a huge sandbox in his living room that he put his grand piano in so he could put his feet in the sand while he played the piano. And, you know, he was a genius. I mean, you listen to Good Vibrations. I think there's a fine line between, you know, madness and genius. And I think that Brian Wilson had picked that. He went over on the dark end. I mean, it's lucky that he's back from his psychosis. But, I mean, yeah, I guess you could say he danced on the wrong side with that. But, you know, Brian Wilson was the guy who wore penny loafers to the beach, you know? He wasn't hip when it came to surfing. And only one of the Beach Boys could ever surf, and that was Dennis. and unfortunately, he drowned.
The so, one that could surf ended up drowning. Wow, how ironic is
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I mean, it's odd. That's the ultimate irony, isn't it?
Wow, but on that note of drowning Beach Boys and everything else, we gotta get out of here for another break. We'll be right back after this.
Since 1948, Fate magazine has delivered a one-of-a-kind reading experience. Covering everything from psychics, UFOs, paranormal investigations, and more. For more information, visit FateMag.com or call 1-800-728-2730. That's 1-800-728-2730. Fate magazine. True reports of the strange and unknown.
Keep internet radio legal, affordable, and independent with LoudCity.com. Discover great music with over 500 channels to choose from, or become a DJ and stream your own music. For more information, visit LoudCity.com today.
This week, it's Classics Week on Dub Theater. Monday night at 9, it's Rocky in French.
Yo, Adrian, voulez-vous causer avec moi, or what?
Tuesday night, Clint Eastwood is Dirty Harry in Polish.
Shidu Babu 44 Magnumski, Kluski Hetski, Kleenowski.
Wednesday, Katharine Hepburn stars in the Academy Award winning On Golden Pond. In Japanese.
Domo arigato, Norman. You old poopa-san.
Thursday night, thrill to the original Star Wars. In Canadian.
Luke, feel the force, eh?
Luke, don't listen to that hoser. Join the dark side, eh?
And Friday. It's one of the most beloved American musicals ever. West Side Story. In Navajo.
Maria, I just met a girl named Maria. Suddenly the name will never be the same.
So tune in for Classics Week, starting Monday right here on Dub Theater.
From the imagination of author Stephen Wren, radio producer for Haunted Voices Radio, and the director of Tennessee Paranormal, a new fiction series based on pirates and the paranormal, Jeremiah Balloon and the Amulet of the Siren. According to a recent review by ParanormalNews.com, there are misty visitors, ghost pirates, orbs of light, astral projection, secret societies, spiritualistic entities, missions of the human soul, which make it a truly enjoyable read. Now available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Borders, Books A Million, Tower Books, and more. Or visit Jeremiah on the web at jeremiahbloom.com or the author, Stephen Wren, at stephenwren.com. Jeremiah Balloon, an Amulet of Osiris.
When a child is abducted, every second counts. That's why this station uses the Internet Radio Amber Alert System, helping to keep your children safe. A free service of the Internet Broadcasting Community and this station.
Did I kill my husband? As the only woman in Illinois to be hung for murder, local lore has tarred me as a bad, bad woman. But there's more to the story. Find out in The Hanging of Betsy Reed by Rick Kelsheimer. I was a healer. They called me a witch and said that I poisoned the old man. 20,000 people came to see me die. I did burn down the jail and didn't even stay buried for long. But did I kill him? Rick Kelsheimer tells my story as fairly as I have ever seen it. Read The Hanging of Betsy Reed, available at Amazon.com.
That's right, Airstrike Radio coming right back at you. We are having an absolute blast with Gary Patterson here tonight, doing a little bit of Airstrike Radio Overtime. That's right, by popular demand, we're doing a little bit of a Airstrike Radio Overtime with our good friend Gary Patterson. Gary, you and I, we go back quite a ways, don't we?
Yeah, we do. Okay. We've always had a good time. That's why I like doing your show.
Here, I'm going to ask you a question I've never asked you, because I've never liked this particular performer, but I'm being forced to talk about him.
Okay.
Michael Jackson's shadow.
Oh, see, the shadow dancing in Neverland?
It's a croc.
The shadow, when they're in the hallway and they see the shadow dart by. And see, I've always purposely not broached a subject with you because I always phone the guy. And this is just me speaking. I want to make that clear. This is just my own opinion. He's a little, he kind of freaks me out back when he was alive.
Well, you know, I think when I think about Michael Jackson, I think about his childhood. I mean, being amazed at how he grew up. And the stories I'd heard about when the Jackson 5 were performing, his father would stand there with a belt, and if one of them made one bad move, he got it. Or that he would stick a hot iron to Michael's feet when he slept, when he was little in the bed at night. And, I mean, it's like a tortured childhood. I don't think he ever grew up. I think that he actually was Peter Pan. I think he lived in Never Never Land with the Lost Boys. And I don't know if you read the book Who Killed Kurt Cobain or Love and Death by Ian Halbert. I know Ian, and Ian had gotten himself in a position where he could go in as a hairdresser, learn some skills, and try to do an investigative report on Michael Jackson, and he was pretty well convinced that he was a pedophile. He was, a molester. But when he got closer to it, he realized that he was just a big child, that he played on the floor with children, that, you know, there was not anything to it. And, you know, so I sort of look at it through that eyes. But, you know, I will tell you this. The Thriller album was incredible. The Thriller video set incredible standards.
He was a great talent.
Videos.
It was his off, like leaving family members dangling over a rail.
Right. You know, those what would you do if you had an 8-year-old child? What I'm saying is I agree with you. Because
absolutely.
When we look at him, we're saying it's not what I would do, not what you would do, not what the normal person that we know would do. But, I mean, he was like a child himself, and I'm not defending him because there were a number of things that happened. But, I mean, you also got to remember that, man, this guy was set up for lawsuits.
Oh, sure.
And he just never got himself into it. And the idea was I just never understood how bad his health was. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's hard for me to imagine Michael Jackson was 50 years old.
Isn't that crazy? I never, when they said he was 50, that shocked me.
Well, it did me too, you know. And the problem was that in his death, now, I've seen the video, and it might be one of those guided-looking things, but, you know, when a rock star dies, they can't simply fade off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what happens is because their music is so important to us and because the music we listen to on radios and in our MP3 players that we still hear it, so they're still with us, that it's like a Greek god. When they died, they went to Mount Olympus, but somehow they still had this presence on Earth. And and when Michael died, I mean, the rumors came out that, you know, he faked his death to escape debt. I remember that, you know, that all those tours were done. He wanted to live a normal life. It was his for personal security that there was threats against his life. So it follows the same pattern of what happens when any rock star dies. And, you know, it's like Elvis sitting in the pool house with his picture made, and that started a lot of the Elvis Alive thing. And I think that, you know, the spirit of Michael Jackson, the ghost thing, I think it's an interesting story. But, you know, it can also be many varied interpretations. I think that I've never heard of Michael Jackson channeling anybody from the other side. Now, that may be happening. But, you know, I think he was a really incredibly talented person. And one thing that I remember, I believe this is true, that when he died, he left 100 unreleased songs for his children. You know, that's worth millions of dollars.
Wow.
And he was a songwriter as a performer. So if you take Elvis and you take Michael Jackson, Elvis was fabulous, but Elvis never wrote a song. Michael Jackson wrote great songs.
Yeah.
And his catalog's going to live forever.
Michael Jackson, as a talent, was absolutely stellar. But we also have to remember, Michael Jackson, in my opinion, was also a product of his environment.
Oh, I agree 100%.
You know, this is a kid.
He was.
Yeah, this is a kid that was thrown out, like, at, what, 7, 8, 9 years old to go sing with the Jackson 5.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how can you have a normal childhood when you're being thrust in the spotlight by Joe Jackson allegedly, and I stress that allegedly, beating their kid, you know, beating his children?
Mm-hmm.
You can't be normal. You can't be normal after that.
No. And, you know, I mean, he wanted to be big. I remember he would stand in the Apollo Theater, I would read, and he'd watch Jackie Wilson perform and do all those dance moves, and that's what made him dance. And then Diana Ross, you know. It's like he was a little lost boy, you know, and I know that there's a lot of negative things about him. I don't want to sit there and defend it. I'm just saying that his artistry goes, I mean, the guy was extremely talented. He's left a great wealth of material that's going to live on, that'll transcend his death.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully that will really take care of his children. And, you know, when anybody thinks that somebody faked their death, when you watched his daughter speak at, you know, at his service, and, you know, she was just overcome with emotion and tears, you know, it was a great loss. And, you know, so I think if we look into the peculiarities of anyone, we may find something, you know, that we can sort of take some offense with. I mean, look at the Bee Gees background and some of the stuff like that. So I remember the Bee Gees were told, they told their parents that if they didn't leave London, that they would put them in reform school. So they moved to Australia. You know, there's a lot of things you don't really know, you know, a lot of things you don't really hear. And it's like in Shakespeare, you know, the evil that men do live after them, the good is often teared with their bones. But, you know, the creative output of it's great. So anyway,
well,
I mean, yeah, he was different.
Yeah, the end product, man, if that's what you create, I won't even go there. Never mind. I'm not going to say keep beating your kids. That would be horrible.
No.
Yes,
nurture an environment.
Exactly. Don't not beat your children, folks. That is what.
Do not.
Absolutely do not. They will not become rock stars. They'll just become cross-eyed.
Yeah. Imagine beating them and getting them on American Idol. Now, that would be a travesty with
no.
Get them to perform.
That shows.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And, you know, and I'm getting bombarded with a lot of these questions about the Doors. Apparently,
okay.
I heard this show of Coast to Coast AM where you had, you know, or Kruger together along with, you know, I cannot remember all the names of the Doors.
Manzarek?
That's right.
Ray
it was
Manzarek.
On the tip of my tongue. Now, in your opinion, is Jim Morrison dead, or do you believe that was a fake?
Wow. You know, it's like, as time passes, you know, you sort of realize that it couldn't be. And the problem about Morrison being alive, when No One Here Gets Out Alive was released with Danny Sugarman, when it came out and Danny was their manager, he sort of leaves it open-ended. Because here's the problem. When Morrison died, how many times do you think the Doors offices heard that Jim Morrison had died?
True.
I mean, there were rumors coming in all the time. All the time. Because Morrison had this incredible lifestyle. He read Rambo, you know, the idea of alienation of the senses. He would go for death rides in the car where he wouldn't touch the brake. There were rumors that in Riders on the Storm, that the killer on the road, that maybe he'd kill somebody and bury him in the desert, that he would walk on ledges on high buildings. He would live in squalor in hotels. And when he went to Paris to write his book of poetry, the rumor came, or the story came in to the Doors office that he had died. So Ray Manzarek turns to Bill Siddons, who was the manager at the time, and he says, Bill, I don't want to be morbid, but make sure. So when Bill gets to Paris, he goes to the apartment that Pamela Corson and Jim lived in, shared together, and he sees a simple coffin, wood veneer, and the lid had been screwed on, and he didn't see the body. So he found out that, you know, Pamela had told him a story. She said, he asked her, he said, well, is Jim dead? And this was when, after the funeral, because when the body was buried, I think there were 6 people at the funeral, and they buried him in a very unmarked grave, And when Siddons come back, you know, they were investigating. They asked Pamela, they said, is Jim dead? And Pamela's answer was, well, if he were alive, he would call me. Now, that's kind of odd. Well, there's a lot of research that came out. Now, first of all, Morrison had an IQ over 150. All right, maybe a little higher. He was brilliant. He had talked to the Doors about leaving this rock and roll lifestyle and being a poet. That's where his heart lay. Or he could go into business. And so that was why Manzarek was interested to make sure. Well, no one saw the body. The Morrison family wasn't notified till after he was buried. So they had no way of checking it when they got his passport. Now, there's a new story, and I want to talk to you about that. Because in Paris, I was in Paris, and let's see, I was trying to remember a few years ago. And I just missed the Doors because Robbie and Ray were there the day after I left, and they were playing a performance in Paris, and I would have loved to have seen it. But I went to Morrison's grave. I always go to Morrison's grave at Père Lachaise. And, you know, so I checked it out. There's always a large group of people around his grave because it's one of the top 10 tourist attractions in France.
Oh, yeah, I imagine.
The French don't understand that. But the French don't understand it. I mean, you go into Père Lachaise, they have Frédéric Chopin. You go in and you look at the graveyards, and there'll be the sign Jim with an arrow. Now, the Morrison family has to pay to have it cleaned. But if you see Jim with an arrow, you never see a sign that says Fred with an arrow to Chopin. It's only to Morrison, and the French don't understand. You know, he's a rock star. And when he was buried there, they didn't say he's a rock star. They said he was an American poet. Mm-hmm. Now, here's what happened, according to a number of sources. Morrison, it's been known that he may have overdosed in a club in Paris. Okay? I think it was Electric Circus.
Yeah, and there is a big controversy over that, isn't there?
Yes, there is. And now the story goes by one of the men in the club that Morrison had died in the bathroom, that he had taken heroin, and that the two men, they had sent a paramedic in to check on him, and he had pronounced him dead. But the two men had sold him the drugs, picked him up, said, no, he's not dead. And they took him back to the apartment. Now, I do know Alan Graham, who was Jim's brother-in-law, and I got to tell you, there's so many touchy things in families and artists who they don't really care for each other, but Graham told me that when Morrison's body was found, and he was married to Anna, Jim's sister at the time, that his back was up against the faucets. Very few people get in a bathtub with their backs against the faucet,
yeah,
which would support the idea that he had died and had been placed there.
Mm.
All right. Now, another book mentions that when the undertakers were called, that somehow or another they could not take his body into the funeral home, so they brought this body bag and filled it with dry ice and put Morrison's body in that bag, and that Pamela Corson slept next to the corpse for like two nights in July so the body wouldn't deteriorate. And the body was buried in a navy blue suit. But see, the legend happened that Pamela didn't have enough money to buy the graveside. She leased it, all right? And she leased it for, I think it was 30 years, which meant in 2001, the body could be exhumed, brought back to the United States, do the Jim Morrison L.A. tour, and bury him in Los Angeles. Because the French noticed that there were a number of riots at this site, and it's the only grave in Père Lachaise where you have two policemen on duty as long as the cemetery is open, and it's marked off. But When the wall went down, a group of Eastern Europeans came over. They partied. They were rather belligerent. A lot of things happened at that cemetery, and the French decided that Morrison had to go home. Now, for whatever reason, I remember, and this sort of surprised me on Coast to Coast, because I asked Ray Manzarek about, did he think Morrison was buried in that grave? Was Jim dead? Well, Robbie always believed it. But I did a show with Ray on VH1, and Ray said, when they open that box in July 2001, I'm going to be there with Doors fans around the world saying, open the box, open the box, which makes me believe that he wasn't convinced Morrison was dead in the grave. But on Coast to Coast, he says, oh, yeah, it's ridiculous. I'm not even going to talk about it. Of course he's dead. Well, you know, that's strange to me because everything's changed. Of course, you know, that's revisionism when you do this.
Mm-hmm.
But the body was supposed to be exhumed, but the French agreed to let the body stay in Père Lachaise because it's a great honor to be buried in that cemetery for a poet. And that's what Morrison deserved.
Sure.
But the Morrison family has to pay to have all the graffiti cleared off all the graves, and they have to provide the security and a security system to make sure someone doesn't try to dig up Jim.
Wow.
So, do I believe it? I believe Jim is the American in Paris resting in Père Lachaise, even though I've talked to a guy in Oregon who claims to be Jim Morrison, and that's another story, I guess.
That is absolutely another story. This is the last break of the night, folks. We'll be right back with the conclusion of R. Gary Patterson right here on Airstrike Radio. We're having just a blast. This night has got my head spinning a little bit with all the cool stuff that's going on, so we'll be right back after this.
Since 1948, Fate Magazine has delivered a one-of-a-kind reading experience. Covering everything from psychics, UFOs, paranormal investigations, and more. For more information, visit FateMag.com or call 1-800-728-2730. That's 1-800-728-2730. Fate Magazine, true reports of the strange and unknown.
You've bought his records, you've seen his films, you've even purchased the Dayglow Velvet Memorial paintings at the gas station. As a true Elvis fan, you think you've heard it all, but wait, there's more. Now you can buy secret recordings of Elvis's last telephone conversations. Yes, it's the Elvis tapes.
Hello, baby. This is Elvis. And I want you to come over right now and make me a big peanut butter and dinner sandwich. A peanut butter and a dinner sandwich will get me through the night.
You'll hear Elvis in his most intimate moments.
Hello, Pizza Man, Pizza. Yeah, this is the Elvis. Why don't you bring me over a couple large pies? I'll make it three. I'll make it six, double cheese. Yeah, I'm home. I'm alone. And I'm hungry.
And you'll hear Elvis reveal how he really feels about the one true love of his life.
I want you back. I want you back in my life, baby. And on your way back, would you pick up some donuts, please? Egg jelly, cream donuts, crullers, cheese, Danish too. I love my big honey glazed donuts. Without them, I can't do.
The Elvis tapes.
Oh, give me more donuts.
Available now in drugstores everywhere.
I love to eat lemon more.
Hello? Hi, Mildred, it's Betty. What are you up to? Oh, just trying to find some information on ghosts. There's so many sites to choose from, I don't even know where to start.
Have I got the place for you. It's called hauntedvoices.com and they got all the info you could ever need.
Really?
Yeah, they even have free EVP lessons. You know, like they showed in that movie with Mikey Keaton.
Oh, the spirit voices.
That's the one. And they have live chats each Monday night at 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern. They got special guests and everything.
What's the site again?
It's hauntedvoices.com.
Thanks, Betty. Gotta run now.
Where to?
Where do you think? To hauntedvoices.com.
There's a storm brewing in this country. A storm of apathy towards some of our most historic landmarks, like Fort Mifflin in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. This is the fort that saved America. It held the British at bay while George Washington went upriver to Valley Forge. Now it's in danger of being shut down. There are people who are weathering this storm.
This is Barbara Saletti, co-founder of the Fort Mifflin Historic Preservation Group.
This is Anthony Saletti, co-founder of the Fort Mifflin Historic Preservation Group.
But they can't do it alone. They need our help. Go to www.myspace.com/SaveFortMifflin or www.fortmifflin.com. Together, we can make a difference. Let's save Fort Mifflin and turn the tide of apathy.
You're listening to your home of stimulating talk radio. Airstrike Radio. Welcome back to Airstrike Radio. We are having a ton of fun with Mr. R. Gary Patterson. And tonight we have learned a lot about rock and roll. The guy is like the Encyclopedia Britannica of rock and roll myths, legends, curses. And we can't let you go there, Gary, without at least sharing us your favorite story.
Mm. Well, now you've really, really pressed it here when I think about my favorite story. Well, I mean, they're all favorites. I mean, I like the Led Zeppelin thing with Jimmy Page at Boleskine House because Page was a major collector of Aleister Crowley. And, you know, one of the funny things is a lot of people call him Aleister Crowley, but you actually have to pronounce it like Holy. Mm-hmm. So it's Crowley.
I've heard
that
too, yeah.
You remember that? And the thing is that, you know, Page owned a bookstore called the Equinox, and Page collected the robes that Crowley wore, the daggers, annotated manuscripts in his own handwriting. And one day, the ultimate collectible came up, and that was the house that Aleister Crowley owned.
Oh,
the
no
house
way.
Was called Boleskine. And if you've ever seen the movie, The Song Remains the Same, a lot of the shots are made at Boleskine House. Well, the house had a dark history. It's the ultimate haunted ghost story in rock and roll, because Boleskine House was built in the medieval period on the spot where a church was burned to the ground with the entire congregation trapped inside. Then, in later years, a man was decapitated inside the house, and people who are brave enough to stay there at night say they can hear the head roll down the stairs. When Crowley bought the house, it had a dark history before Crowley. A number of people died there. It seems like their wives, the women in the house, had gone, either become drug addicts and died, or they were committed to mental institutions. One man tried to kill his entire family there. Another man had taken a butcher cleaver and cut off his hand, you know, and bled to death.
Yeah.
So you had the dark history. This is before Crowley. So Crowley takes it, and the story goes that he had unleashed a number of elemental spirits. He had summoned them to do his bidding. And Kenneth Anger, who was probably, well, he's an occult filmmaker in Hollywood. You're probably familiar with him. He did one film called Lucifer Rising, where Jimmy Page was to provide the music. Well, he met Page, and he got to have his studio in Boleskine House. And he told a story about this very heavy painting that weighed at least 100 pounds. And he said he and some other people were there, and the painting lifted off the wall and floated to the floor. And he said, oh, did you see that? Now, he also said that Jimmy Page had never spent the night in the house because of what was there. Because the story goes that Crowley had not unbound these spirits, or, you know, they were still roaming the house, and that Page eventually sold the house. And there was a curse placed on Jimmy Page by Anger, because Page didn't provide enough music for Lucifer Rising, and strange things happened to the band, like John Paul Jones broke a finger on his hand and they had to cancel the tour. John Bonham had a number of car accidents. Robert Plant and his wife were almost killed in a car accident on vacation. But nothing seemed to happen to Page. And when they did the tour, I think it was in 77 in New Orleans, Robert Plant got word that his son Carrick had died from this stomach ailment. And, you know, it just seems that with the death of Bonham a few years later, that Led Zeppelin was over. So it's kind of interesting to get back together. But a lot of people blamed it on Page's interest in black magic. But Jimmy Page never said that he worshipped the devil. You know, he was interested in magic. And when you talk about magic, you talk about metaphysics and all that. That's an interesting story.
Mm-hmm.
One other one that I share sometimes had to do with the story of Carl Perkins. When Perkins went to record the Tug of War album with Paul McCartney, after he'd finished recording his sessions, he wrote a song called My Old Friend. And he sang it. He said, Paul, listen to this song. And he wrote the song for him, and the chorus went, My old friend, think about me every now and then. He said when he sang that, Paul looked at him in shock, and he had tears in his eyes. And he said, Carl, wait a minute. You sing this for Linda. So he gets Linda McCartney, and he said that Paul and Linda sat on the floor, and he said, play it, Carl. And Carl played the song, and every time he said the chorus, Paul looked at Linda, Linda looked at Paul, and tears ran out of Paul's eyes. He gets up, and he goes out by the pool. Carl turns to Linda and he says, Linda, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset him. I don't know what I've done. He said, I didn't mean to do this. And Linda said, Carl, how did you know? And he said, what do you mean, how did I know? And she says, the last time that Paul and I saw John in the Dakota, when John went into the building, he turned to Paul and he said, hey, my old friend, think about me every now and then, which was the exact lyric to the chorus.
Wow.
Carl Perkins believes that was John Lennon channeling through him to make peace with Paul McCartney.
That
and he told me that story.
That was awesome.
That is,
and that story's
crazy.
In my next book. So,
we're definitely gonna have to get your next book and all the stuff you're putting out there, because it's really awesome stuff. Quick question coming in here: is there any truth to the legend that that John Lennon saw a UFO.
It's true. He was with May Pang, but he wasn't at the Dakota. And the story goes he'd gotten out of the bath, out of the shower. He was completely naked. And he goes out and he sees this UFO. Oh, and he stands out and he stares at it. He asks May Pang to come out. I think they took photos, but the photo didn't take. And he saw this huge object. And he said it was very close to him. And he started yelling at it, "Hey, take me, take me." And it left. So he thought he'd go in and take me naked, right? Of course, he'd done that, you know, in the Two Virgins album.
That's like asking them to get heinous with your anus, okay? You just don't do it.
Right. He goes in, and he picks up the phone. He's going to call the police and report it. And he says, well, you know, that's going to make me look like a fruitcake. When Walls and Bridges comes out, if you look at the album on the back, he says, on this date, I saw a flying or UFO, and he wrote his name, John Lennon. Now, there's another story, and I don't know if your listeners know this. John Lennon claimed to have been visited at the Dakota by aliens. And this story goes with Uri Geller. And Uri Geller says that Lennon had told him, tells him this story that he and Yoko were asleep. This is when they're back together after the lost weekend. He saw a light under his door. He walks into the hallway, and he sees these alien life forms that look like insects. So he sort of reaches out to try to step on one, and he said his beam of light just surrounded him. And one of the life forms put this strange object in his hand. And he could remember himself being, like, teleported back to his room. He wakes up the next morning, and he tells Yoko the story, and he shows her this thing, this little piece of metal, maybe a stone metal. Mm-hmm. And so she says, you shouldn't tell anybody else about this. So he and Uri Geller were friends, and he says, all right, Uri, I'm going to tell you this story. He tells him about being visited by these aliens, and he hands Uri the stone. And he says, I don't know what this is. I don't know if this is like a free pass to take a ride to another dimension. I have no idea. And then John was assassinated. So Uri Geller still has it. And that might be a good story to look into as well. Because
Uri Geller.
Uri Geller.
Wow.
And the story that John had actually been visited by alien life forms. Wow. So that's it's pretty well a good answer to what happened with the flying saucer sighting with May Pang and also the idea about being visited by aliens. So John Lennon seems to have some cosmic attraction there.
I'm getting hit with a ton of questions. Unfortunately, we're running long time, guys. We can't stay here 24 hours as much as they'd like us to. We can't. Everything from Jodie Foster and John Lennon connection is out there. Someone wants to know, can you quickly wrap that one up?
Jodie Foster?
Yeah.
I'm not aware of any relationship.
The
I know that John Hinckley.
That's it. That's what they're referring to.
John Hinckley had known that John Lennon had a relationship with Jodie Foster. I suppose that it wouldn't have been Mark David Chapman who had been after him, you know, because the whole thing is, one other thing real quickly about Lennon, and you know, we're talking about Paul is dead too, there is one thing that just really sort of made the hair stand on the back of my neck. On the Magical Mystery Tour, you have John Lennon standing in front of a sign that says, the best way to go is by M&D Coach, MDC. The exact initials of Mark David Chapman, with John Lennon standing in front of the picture that says, the best way to go is by MDC. Now, here's the other thing. The Magical Mystery Tour album was released on December 8th, 1967, 13 years to the exact day that John Lennon would be murdered by Mark David Chapman.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a whole other story. There's just so many of them. But unfortunately, Gary, we got like 5 minutes left of this show. Go ahead, and I'd like you to plug everything you got going out there, all the books, all the movies, all everything that you're out there doing. We definitely want to get that out there. And you will be back. We'll definitely have Gary back. Don't worry, folks. He will be coming back.
Well, thank you. I've had a great time, and it's always fun doing this. But like right now, I guess my main projects is I'm working on my fourth book, and what I normally do is spend several years in research because I want the greatest stories, and I'm going to write it this summer, and I guess that'll make my agent happy in New York, so she'll have an opportunity to go out and do something with it. I'm also always interested in anything in television. Like I said, I did E! Doomed to Die 13 Curses. There's plenty of great stories that I think would be fabulous for television. I'm working on a documentary, trying to get a documentary together on the Muscle Shoals Rhythm Section. All the great music came out of Muscle Shoals, Alabama. my partner in that is Paul Justman. He's a director who did Standing in the Shadows of Motown. You may be familiar with that. So we've been working on trying to find a home for that. We're working on a number of TV projects that have to do with paranormal, rock and roll. There's a number of books, some artists that I'm talking to that I may find myself interested enough to do a book on someone's life and rock and roll. I like to sort of do it the way I do things instead of a standard rock biography, though. I mean, I enjoy having fun with it, and it's compelling stuff. So I'm always busy. I'm always looking for new projects, though, and I'm always looking for great new stories. So if anyone knows one, go to my website, www.rgarypatterson.com. Send me an email. I'd be glad to talk to you and listen to anything that you might suggest. It'd be fun.
Wow. Wow, man. Oh. You're busier than we are.
Oh, I tell you. Plus, I teach.
Plus, you teach. That's
He's
right.
He's wearing me out.
I know you.
Never
that.
A dull moment, let me tell you.
Well, we're going to take off the show with Peggy Sue once again, done by Buddy Holly, and you know, so we can remember this moment having actually Peggy Sue on the show. And
she's great, I tell you.
Definitely. So until next time, guys, thank you so much for listening.
If you knew Peggy Sue, then you know why I feel blue without Peggy. My Peggy Sue. Oh, well, I love you, Gally. For you, oh Peggy, my Peggy Sue. Oh, well, I love you, gal. Yes, I love you, Peggy Sue. Peggy Sue, Peggy Sue. Pretty, 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 pretty Peggy Sue. Oh, Peggy, my Peggy Sue. Oh, well, I love you, gal, and I need.
A date which will live in infamy.
You will be a minister of death, praying for war.
To speak the truth, the whole truth, frankly and boldly.
What is your major malfunction, numbnut?
Did your parents have any children that live?
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
Oh, thank you.